Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder, by the way, despite all the rumors that are going around, and I don't know who starts these rumors.
No idea.
Absolutely fine. You have no reason to worry. You don't have to make a card. You don't have to send flowers. She's fine. She's taking a scheduled day off. She will return on Monday. In her stead, Dane Neal is sitting where I usually sit. I'm sitting where Wendy usually sits. Thank you for sitting in my spot.
Yes, you absolutely are. You know, I think people that love the show, and there are so many, their first thought, as is mine, especially now that we've raised the question of possible, you know, nefarious, who knows what could.
There's nothing wrong with Wendy.
What's Wendy doing? Is she getting a jump on some shopping?
Just taking a day off.
Just kicking it, going to watch some daytime TV, maybe a Maury.
Oh, I'm sure she'll watch Maury.
Paternity related
today,
television.
Find out who's the father of who. But here's what goes on. Our company, much like many other companies, has days off based on the calendar year. And if you don't take your days off by the end of the year, you lose your days off. And Wendy had a couple more days off to take, and so she took one today. And we've also convinced her she should take Saturday and Sunday off, which is ridiculous because we get Saturday and Sunday off. But she has taken those days off as well. Yeah. So she's off today, and Dane, you're filling in the first half, and then we'll have the revolving door of co-hosts will spin once again, and we will have somebody else for you in the second half. Now, also, Dave Ennett is sticking around for just a little bit because there was a huge story yesterday at the end of our show, and it happened right at the end of our show, and we didn't get to cover it. So Dave's been kind enough to stay with us for a little bit and talk us through what this means. But Jay Cutler, who has been the Bears quarterback for years and years and years and years, is injured. He has a torn labrum. It's surgery. It's season ending. And I guess the possibility is that he will have quarterbacked his last game for our Chicago Bears. And I need to discuss that. Thanks for staying here, Dave.
Oh, sure, Bill. Happy to do it, Dave.
All right. Here's the question I have right off the bat. Last night I was watching the 10 o'clock news and I'm flipping around and I saw this on two different channels. His teammates were coming out, guys who are currently members of the Chicago Bears, and just saying incredibly wonderful, glowing things about Jay Cutler and what a great leader he is and how much he means to the Bears and the Bears mean to him. And my question is this. Why doesn't that translate to the rest of the Bears fans? Why does the team recognize him as one thing, but those of us who are brave enough to watch the Bears on a weekly basis don't see that?
Because I think people came to conclusions about Cutler pretty early on in his stay in Chicago, and part of it probably was maybe affected a little bit by what they had heard coming out of Denver when the Bears traded for him.
Yeah.
And so I think that he already came here with sort of that there was this predisposition that this guy, he's not a great guy in the locker room, and he's got kind of an attitude, and he kind of carries himself a certain way. And I just don't think that anybody, the guy could have been out saving puppies, and I'm not sure it would have changed people's opinion of him.
If there is the Jay Cutler Foundation, it may be saving puppies. There may be some great works. Does he have a secret locker room persona where, because he is kind of got that, and I think you can read a lot into people's kind of body language. He just always has that kind of, like, he doesn't care, dismissive. You know, he just doesn't seem as rah-rah into it as, let's say, a Peyton Manning.
But see, that's the impression, Dane, that I think a lot of people have come away with him. Is there a secret locker room? I think everybody if you're not in the locker room, everybody's persona in the locker room is kind of a secret. You know, I mean, it's, you hear things and you kind of get an idea of what a guy might be like, but it doesn't mean they don't interact differently when it's just the players among each other. And I'm sure that there are probably, it's like anybody, it's like any workplace. Mm-hmm. There are going to be people who don't get along, who don't like each other. It's never been a secret that on the 85 Bears, greatest team perhaps ever in the NFL, there were guys who didn't like each other on that team, but they still managed to come together for a common goal. And I think that probably in this case, there are guys who didn't like Jay Cutler, but I'm sure there are guys who were in his corner and still are.
And they know him best, and they know certainly, and we've always said he has all this potential, all this talent, but there's been some disconnects, I think, with the public. And part of it is because he doesn't ever, I don't want to say ever, he almost never says the right thing, you know, and when you come up to the injuries. And so when something happens on the field, he doesn't seem, and this is crazy, right? He doesn't seem upset enough about it. And then also, everybody gets injured at some point in an NFL career. He just seems like it's Wendy and she's got extra days off. He seems completely fine with it, where we've seen in other sports players who've had season ending and where they're kind of tearing up crying that they can't get out there and help. And Jay just doesn't seem to care.
Well, you remember there was a game earlier this year where Pernell McPhee, who was injured and wasn't even playing, confronted Cutler on the sidelines after a turnover.
Right.
Or I think it was a turnover at the time. I think it was a Monday night game.
Yeah.
And so clearly there was an issue there between a couple of teammates. But look, they're both – McPhee wants to win. He wants the team to succeed. He can't play because he's hurt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that it's one of the – I'll go back to what I said a moment ago. I think a lot of people kind of had this notion – of Jay Cutler. Look, there were a lot of people in town have looked at different athletes over the years, have come through Chicago and said, he's not a real rah-rah guy. He's not a real team guy.
Yeah.
And at some point, people appreciate him.
Yeah.
Because I think perceptions can change.
Yeah, sure.
But I think that if this guy had been in more commercials, and you saw him kind of joking around on TV more, doing stuff that was sort of maybe out of character, then we'd have a different impression of him.
Don't
he hasn't
you
been
think,
that
though,
guy.
He could have. The potential was there for Jay Cutler to have owned Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
He was the quarterback of the Bears.
No
He's
question.
Got a beautiful wife. He's got a great-looking family. If things had gone right, if he had won some more games and made some more appearances and not just seemed so cocky all the time, he could have been the king of the city.
Well, but I think that if you go back a year or so, everybody would say, well, this is the new Cutler. He doesn't turn the ball over now. He's playing really well.
Yeah.
And this and that. With Adam Gase, it appeared that
you
know, there had been a meshing. And then Gase leaves, right? And now this has been a very tough year. But ultimately, the quarterback, even though he is the guy around whom the universe always revolves, right? It's a situation where if you don't have the right players around you, it doesn't matter if you're Johnny Unitas.
Right.
It doesn't. I mean, you still, and when he's been here, have the Bears been a serious, except for the one year when they went to the NFC Championship game,
right?
Have they been a legitimate contender for the Super Bowl?
No.
And they haven't been.
The current coaching staff has never been more than kind of lukewarm in their support of Jay Cutler. It seemed as though, based on the contract, they were obligated, right, to keep him and be supportive. The players, I think, are always going to read right out of the handbook of proper responses and that they support him and all that. Do you think, and do you feel, Dave, as a guy who covers this, that everybody's kind of maybe relieved that this could be the end and they can start fresh, regardless of how much talent they may have available? They got a draft pick.
Well, I think, Dane, at some point you have to look at the situation and say, would it be better if at this point we go our separate ways? And it wasn't really affordable for the Bears to do it until now. But
is that why this took so long? Was it a money issue?
It was kind of that 7-year contract that he had
when
with the guaranteed money. Now, the guaranteed money drops way down next year. The salary cap hit drops.
I think his guaranteed money is at zero next year. I think his guaranteed money ends this season, right?
I think there's like a couple million or something. But, I mean,
who needs that?
Yeah.
Thanks, but no thanks.
But I think if you look at it in the big picture compared to what it has been,
it's near zero.
It's affordable now for the Bears to get out from under. And so then they have to ask. And look, this regime is not the regime that gave him the contract.
Right.
It's not the regime that made the trade with Denver to bring him here.
Right.
So they can look at it somewhat objectively and say, is this the guy we want to go forward with? Now, here's the other tricky part, though. If you get rid of Jay Cutler, whether you release him or whether you somehow find a team that's willing to take him and his contract or whatever, do you have someone who's ready to come in here and quarterback the Bears next year as a legitimate number one NFL quarterback? And there's nobody right now in the draft that you would say, okay, this is a guy who's going to come in here and start for day one and give us a chance to win.
Right.
Or maybe there will be. But it's not one of those quarterback-rich drafts.
It doesn't seem to be.
And so, you know, you have to have a plan if you're going to get rid of a guy.
Yeah.
You can't just ask Chicago fans, 64,000 people to come out every Sunday or actually less now, I guess it's right. Field, to come out.
500, you can't ask 500 people to come out every Sunday.
I mean, that's a large group, the reasonably large group right. of people.
But you have to have a legitimate.
You don't think Tony Romo's the answer. I know he's older, but you don't think he's a stopgap.
Tony Romo may have some options. Is Tony Romo going to want to come here? Or is he going to want to come to a place where he might have a chance to win next year?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, he doesn't have that many
right.
next year's.
He's 36 left. Or 7
yeah,
or something.
And he's you know, had all these injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's another thing.
Right.
You're going to get rid of a quarterback who has recently had a series of injuries. This year has been pretty much a washout
yeah.
in terms of injuries for Cutler. Now you're going to go out and get another quarterback, also a 30-ish something quarterback, and bring him in who's had maybe a worse track record when it comes to injuries
yeah.
and bring him here. And if you're Tony Romo, if you have some choices,
why
I don't think you're
one.
Coming here. I mean, I know he played his college football downstate,
yeah.
but still, and he'd be with a you know, one of the great.
See, look, you're making a case.
I'm making a case to a point, but I'm stopping myself because then I'm Tony Romo and I'm saying, look, what if the Denver Broncos want to bring me in there?
Well, here's the thing that makes it easy is because of the injury and the, you know, and who knows what Cutler's going to be, some kind of diminished version of himself. It makes it easy. He's not available. The Jay Cutler that you, it's not just we don't like him and he's crabby.
Right.
It's just that maybe he just can't play anymore. And then you've got the contract and the finances. I think the saddest thing, you talk about the investment that the fans make going to the games and of course the investment in dollars. It just seems like, and I hope I don't hear this, is that when he's gone, that Jay Cutler never really cared. You know, he never really cared, you know?
Do you think?
I don't think.
Do you think, Dave?
No, I do think that the guy wanted to win. I don't think he showed that necessarily.
Right.
I mean, his mannerisms, his body language didn't
yeah.
always reflect that.
Yeah.
And that's getting back to my point a moment ago. It's I don't think you can judge necessarily whether a person inside has the desire
right.
to win based on that. Now,
right.
did he have some bad turnovers, worst possible moments?
Yes.
And so you factor that in, you roll it all together. The turnovers, the body language,
yeah.
the Brandon Marshall
yeah.
comments,
yeah.
All that kind of thing. And then you get this perception of the guy. But again, I get back to the coaching situation.
Sure.
Head coaches, offensive coordinators, offensive line that's been sort of a constant. It's been a merry-go-round.
It has.
I mean,
it has.
It's tough. He loses the guy who I think was his most reliable offensive weapon in Matt Forte.
Yeah, that's a big loss. One more quick question, and then I know you have to audition for a play.
I do. Thank you.
I don't want to take you
thanks.
Away.
Yeah, I don't want to be late because I want to make sure I get the callbacks.
You. Mm-hmm. Can you think of another athlete in this city that had more raw ability and talent and just didn't know what to do with it than Jay Cutler?
Wow.
I can't think of any. A guy who just had the tools to be a winning quarterback in his case, but mm-hmm. I'll open this up to any of your major sports. I can't think of a guy who came to this city with more ability and just squandered it, had no idea what to do with it.
Yeah, I think that it's unique. I think it's unique. Yeah. I mean, I think that even if guys have not been on winning teams
yeah.
consistently, they have managed to have very solid individual performances. And it's tough because football, it's so dependent on how your offensive line is playing,
yeah.
how your receivers are playing. I mean, look at a guy like Chris Sale. Chris Sale is one of the best pitchers.
Yeah.
He was the starter in the All-Star game
yeah.
last year. Now he's maybe going to get traded next week.
I know.
And mm-hmm. so maybe Chris Sale, if the Bears wouldn't mind a left-handed quarterback,
throw him in.
Maybe
there.
That's the answer.
I like
you
your
keep
answer.
Him in town.
You're good.
He's got
yeah.
a strong arm.
You've solved everyone's problems,
there you
Dave.
Go.
Thank
have
you
a great
so
weekend.
Much. Go have a great audition. That's Dave. He's auditioning, so he can't stay. Dane Neal is staying, and I'm Bill Leff. And if you want to join us, we're at 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy, who will return on Monday. She had a scheduled day off. I know that anytime we talk about Jay Cutler, especially now it probably seems like you're kicking a guy when he's down. He's injured. He's got a torn labrum. It's a bad situation. I know he needs surgery. I just it's so disappointing what he brought to the Bears. There were such high expectations from him when he came for him when he came over from Minnesota. They never paid off. He was a less than 500 quarterback as a member of the Bears, and that's a sad thing. But again, as I always say, whenever I've criticized him, and it's happened on a weekly basis for the last 7 years, it's not just him. It's the ownership of the Bears. It's the general management of the Bears. It's the coaching of the Bears. It's who they select. They have a terrible history of drafts, awful history of trades. It's not just Jay Cutler, but he's the biggest component in it all.
Well, when you look at all that disappointment and you look statistically, I think Jay Cutler is probably maybe next to Sid Luckman, right, is the greatest statistical quarterback in the history of the Bears.
Yeah.
Right? So all that, I don't know, non-success kind of adds up to like what you said. I think the thing that makes it, as people that watch the games on a regular basis and want good things to happen, is that I think you could pull for a guy who maybe had less talent, but just, you know, really 100%. Tried, overcame, you know, 110%, gave all that kind of effort out there. And I think the thing that makes it sad is that, and you brought it up, is that this is a guy in any of the sports shows every Sunday for the last, I don't know, 10 years, for his entire career, have always talked about how talented he is, what a great arm he has, and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't necessarily translate into a winner. We look at people, you look at Doug Flutie, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he won games, but you look at him on paper and it's just not going to happen. Somebody had mentioned Drew Brees. This is a guy that's a winner all around, but just didn't, you know, physically look like, you know, Jay Cutler is perfect as far as what you look on paper for a quarterback.
Yeah. It just didn't pan out. It's very sad. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill Leff. It's Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy on WGN. Dane, would you agree with me that this music is whimsical?
I think this is a stress reliever.
Don't Isn't
you just,
it?
Yeah, it just kind of lightens the mood.
I would like this music to follow me wherever I go.
All the way to the end, if you could plan out, you know, like Fidel Castro planned out every aspect of his final arrangements.
Yes.
This would be it, huh?
I would always like this music to play behind me wherever I am to keep me in a whimsical mood. I bring the song up for a reason. It's me, by the way. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill, and that's Dane over there. Dane's filling in for Wendy, who's fine. She's just taking a day
off. Absolutely fine. Nothing to worry
about. Couldn't
be
better.
Nothing to see. Move along.
Later on, we'll post her charts on Facebook so people can see.
Like
she's fine,
like an EKG or something.
Yeah.
See, it's still moving, not a
flat. Her
line.
Heart she's rate is fairly normal. So, here's the reason I bring this up. You have children, and they are of what age?
We've got a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 5-year-old.
10, 8, and 5. Would you say that your kids are in their prime?
Just in their prime, for sure.
In their prime,
athletically, mentally, it's not going to get any better.
This is the high point of their existence. Are they in their Disney prime? Are your kids lovers of all things Disney?
Sure.
They are? To what extent? Is their room, like if you go into their rooms, do they have Disney bedspreads and decals and stuff?
You know, for the girls, for sure. You know, they're on multi-years. Well, actually, Eleanor, who's the 8-year-old girl, she was a kind of a police woman or something along that lines there. But Vivi's on at least, I think, the third year of Disney Princess. I think she was... I think she might have been Snow White this year.
Oh,
she was
very nice.
Cinderella last time, and maybe which one's the mermaid? Are you
Ariel?
Yeah, Ariel. She was Ariel when
Well, I should have taken a second or two to ponder that, but I knew it right away.
Yeah, you did. Well, because you even knew who the third violin guy from the left on the Jiminy Cricket song was.
Yeah,
it's pretty
ukulele,
impressive stuff.
The ukulele guy. Here's the reason I bring this up. If your kids were indoctrinated into all things Disney, and I think it'd be almost impossible if you lived in not just the United States, but through most of the world, to not be influenced by them. I don't mean just to visit Disneyland and Disney World, but the movies are constant. Disney puts out about a half a dozen movies per year, sometimes under the Disney blanket, but now they also own Marvel and they own the Star Wars franchise. So there's a lot of cross-pollination there.
The blanket. So then you got the Disney bunk beds over to the side.
Yes.
They really have stretched, right, where there are things out there that are Disney, you know, creations and productions and done to that really high level, but they may not be your A-list frontline Disney team photo. You
right.
know, the Mickey Mouse, the Donald Duck, you know, those
right.
kind of guys. And so, yeah, they love all that stuff. And how, I think we are so, we're just really blessed to have Disney because they, I think, do things to a standard.
Oh, yeah.
That we can compare all other things to. They do it right. And yes, right. If you're a kid and, you know, you like animated, anything animated when I was a kid, it could have been, it could have been a commercial for cereal or whatever. There's a cartoon guy in it. Boom. It was, you know, ahead of the rest of the things. If you love that kind of stuff, then, you know, here's what I'm surprised about. You know, some of the things, some of the animated television out there that's still held up, I'm a little bit shocked. You know, Tom and Jerry, when, you know, I grew up watching some of those things. And
Warner
now
Brothers.
You look at it and, you know, they're killing, they're electrocuting each other. They're just axe murdering each other constantly. It's a lot of violence.
Yeah.
But you look at a lot of the Disney stuff, even Cinderella and some of those originals, that's Vivian's favorite movie. She'll watch that again.
Really?
I'm surprised how long and how strong it's held up.
Yeah. The reason I bring this up is this. There have been, over the last couple of years, Disney has figured out how to take hits and repackage them. Now, sometimes that means they'll turn it into a sequel. Sometimes, and they're about to do this with Beauty and the Beast, and they've already done this with a couple of their other movies, they make a live-action version of what has already been a huge hit. Beauty and the Beast was one of their biggest of all-time box office hits. So now they're coming out with a live-action version, and I don't know if you've seen the clips for it. It's the girl from Harry Potter who plays Belle in it.
Okay.
And it really looks entertaining. I mean, the animated version was fantastic, but this one holds up, certainly. So Disney has found a way to monetize their successes. They quickly bury their mistakes. They've had movies that haven't done well.
Which ones?
And they... What was the one...
Was the Bill Cosby Leonard series or Disney?
No, that was not Disney. I'm trying to think of what the movie was that David Spade did a voice on that didn't do well. Emperor's New Groove. Thank you, Kevin. Emperor's New Groove. That's one. I mean, they've had other ones that have just kind of not done well. I don't know that Hunchback of Notre Dame did real well.
Okay.
They've had a couple over the years.
Well, here's the thing, is that they have found a way to keep things fresh and new and
sure.
and put it out there. And that's, you know, in Hollywood, that's what you're looking for. You know, these franchises that you can have what would be, I think, a bet with good odds for financial success. And they've
yeah.
done it. And when there's things out, there are things out there that are really, you know, popular and profitable franchises out there, they just go and you know, look at the Star Wars thing.
Right.
And that's going to be, here's the thing too. And I'm glad that they were the ones who took a hold of some of those things that are so iconic and beloved, is that, you know, that they're going to handle it well.
Right.
It's not going to turn into something
right.
like, geez, I wish someone else was running.
No,
that. I mean, it's going to be great.
As far as businesses go, they have figured it out. I mean, if anyone's ever stayed at a hotel in Disney World or just visited the park or Disneyland, you realize, boy, they really don't make mistakes. They have figured everything out.
I didn't say Gator, but you just...
No, well, that was out of their control.
No.
That was out of their control. All right, so now I will tell you the story of one of their biggest hits and why you haven't seen a sequel to it. Because it's a very strange story that was just published on Yahoo yesterday about one of the things that they did years ago that made them an incredible amount of money. And you say to yourself, like Toy Story, you go, well, of course, Toy Story made money. So what does that mean?
Toy Story 2 and 3
and as far in as we can. But in this particular case, for a very strange reason, you're not going to see any more of it. I'll explain that in just a little bit. It's Bill Leffin. It's Dane Nealon for Wendy on WGN.
It means no worries for the rest of your day.
It's Bill Leff, and it's Dane Neal, whose fast food franchise Hakuna Potato did not take off the way some had hoped.
Just go back to the drawing board.
Yep. Don't give up on it. It's your dream. We're talking about Disney for a little bit, and I'll explain why. But Disney, as you and I have discussed, has a way of finding something and making not just making it pleasant for everybody, Disney fans and others alike, but also figuring out how to monetize it and make a bunch of money.
Yes, they do that.
A text has come in. Don't forget that Disney makes a ton of money on Broadway musical remakes and popular movies. I saw Lion King on Broadway. It was magnificent. Fantastic job. They
do the Disney on Ice tours.
Yeah.
I know we've gone to those. Every single movie has its own on ice touring
yep.
version.
Yep.
They don't miss anything.
When I was a kid, we had a thing called Disney on Parade that came by, I think, every 2 or 3 years. And it was like Disney on Ice, But it was just, it was your favorite Disney characters just coming out and waving at the crowd and sometimes acting out scenes from Disney movies. Sometimes they would just sit on a couch.
Yeah, they were just jamming, freestyle, right. Whatever they felt right. Like doing.
It's like the Merv Griffin show. They would come out, they would sit on the couch. Mickey would ask them a question.
Chain smoking.
Yeah, there was some smoking going on. But Disney on Ice, we took our daughters to several times when they were young. And the reaction of the room whenever, like, you'd always get some ancillary characters, like the Three Little Pigs would come out and wave and the crowd would love it.
You know them. You recognize them.
You see the Three Little Pigs.
You appreciate their work.
But when Mickey and Minnie came out.
Those are stars.
It was up for grabs. You couldn't hear yourself think.
You wonder, and I don't know if you've spent any time in the mascot game, but I wonder if there is some kind of competitive hierarchy of who get, or if they switch it off, you know, hey,
yes.
You're the pigs today and you can be Donald tomorrow, right. You know, or if somebody just, if you ascend to the level of, you know, like the third Mickey, you know, or something, right?
Because, right.
Because I know for Ronald McDonald, it's a very prestigious role. So maybe to be Mickey.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how that works.
I don't know how it works.
Or you get paid more. How does that work?
847 has a suggestion for you, Dane. Your Hakuna Potato franchise did not work out. They suggest you change it to Hakuna Frittata, more of an ethnic flair. I like it.
Just a different word. That's it. It was that simple, and now we're fixed.
Fixed. Remember when you had TGI Thursdays, and yeah. I said to you, that's yeah. not going to play?
Well, update. I mean, yeah, just to kind of play, like, let's just get crazy. On Thursday, I did not take into consideration that people have stuff to do.
Come on, don't even worry about it. Yeah. All right, so here's the thing. Disney, years and years and years ago, 1988 to be exact, had a film called Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Oh,
highly acclaimed.
I remember that.
4 stars from the critics, did incredible box office business. People going back to see it 2 and 3 and 4 times.
I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that
That's
way.
That's it. That's it. So you would say to yourself, if you've got a hit like Who Framed Roger Rabbit and mm-hmm. a hot director like Robert Zemeckis, you say, well, this you make a Roger Rabbit 2 and you make a 3 and you make a 4 and this will survive for years and years and years. And yet it didn't. Can you guess why?
Well, when I think back, and I think I actually saw that in the theater, and it was, I think it was kind of, you know, kind of a murder mystery, James Bondish. They could have gone a lot of different ways with Roger Rabbit.
Sure.
I don't know. It was, I think, the groundbreaking blend of animation and live action in the same movie.
It right? was.
So it was one of those. Did they kill off all the important characters on accident?
Nope.
Because you could always do flashbacks, Bill.
Nope. None of that's true. None of that's the reason. The reason, and this story just came out on Yahoo last night, is that the Disney Corporation is embarrassed by Jessica Rabbit, who was Roger Rabbit's wife. She was, if you'll remember...
She was naughty.
She was, yeah.
Slightly.
She was
right,
very...
She had kind of a, yeah. But I think they explained it away with she's just drawn that way.
That was her line.
I think they could have drawn her a little more, I don't know, just, you know, less suggestive.
Possibly. Although at the time, like when you saw it, you go, well, I know what they're going for. You know, they're going for one of those bombshells of the 40s. That's what they're selling.
Yeah. It was still a family movie, I think.
Wasn't that one of the Disney movies where there was a frame or two where Disney animators may have not put as many clothes on the character?
Mm.
That happened in a couple of Disney movies.
Like the Clark, you know, cub mascot
yeah.
picture?
Yeah, because Clark doesn't always put his pants on.
I don't know, Bill. I remember that part.
There's an interview that was just published in Telegraph that is timed with the release of the Brad Pitt, Marianne Cotillard World War II thriller Ally. The reason is Robert Zemeckis is the director of that movie. He also directed Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Was Brad Pitt in Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
I don't think he was.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he was not. Robert Zemeckis talked about his unproduced script for Roger Rabbit 2. The original movie is set in a fantastical Hollywood of the 1940s. Where toons and humans live together, and the bumbling Roger Rabbit is accused of murder. The director described his follow-up concept as more of a continuation to that story than a sequel. It follows Roger and Jessica, a very alluring toon wife, as they depart the noirish 1940s for the cinematic 1950s. Zemeckis also said that he would have used a digitally created version of the late Bob Hoskins. Bob was the main character, Eddie Valiant, I think was his name.
And we saw with the Empire Carpet commercial, you just, you know, if something happens with your star physically, you
yeah.
just go animated.
Right. Nobody notices the difference.
No, there used to be a guy.
Remember on The Sopranos when Nancy Marchand, who played, was her name Livy Soprano? It was Tony's mother. So the actress had died in between seasons. So they took footage of her and they superimposed it on another actress. And it didn't look, it didn't quite look perfected at the time. I mean, I know they've done that now with every once in a while an actor or an actress.
So it looked like that Snapchat where it's kind of.
Yeah, it was very herky jerky. I guess they could have done that with Roger Rabbit. Even though he says the script exists, the director thinks it's exceedingly unlikely that it will ever be shot, which doesn't make sense because Roger Rabbit really did make a lot of money, an incredible
toys,
amount of money.
You name it.
Oh, yeah.
All the merchandising.
And if I remember right, for a while, remember at the very beginning of Roger Rabbit, there's a character named Baby Herman who on screen is an adorable little baby, and then as soon as they're done shooting...
Doesn't he have a big cigar? Yeah. And he's like, where's my close-up? Where's the craft services?
But didn't Disney make a couple of short films with Baby Herman that if you went to see other Disney movies, they would show a Baby Herman short before the movie? They did, didn't they?
Yeah, he had some cameos in things.
Yeah, I thought so.
You love that thing. It's the baby looks like a baby... But yeah. It's really a crazy. I think in the Zootopia, there was a. I mean, it was a fox, but it was a baby posing as a baby. But actually, it was a, you know, a cigar smoking criminal. So I think that's a nice theme they got there.
Just to be clear, if you're just tuning in, babies, in our opinion, probably shouldn't smoke cigars.
No,
it's probably bad for them.
Everything in moderation, Bill.
Yep. Even though he says that script exists, the director says it's unlikely it'll ever be shot since Disney owns the rights to it, and he says, and this is a quote. The current corporate Disney culture has no interest in Roger, and they certainly don't like Jessica at all. Now, there's been rumors of this for years and years and years. Anytime anybody ever asks, hey, when is that movie going to come out? They quickly change the subject over at Disney, but the rumor has always been that that particular character, and Disney's had some very, very dark characters over the years. Nearly every one of their movies, if you look at their movies of the 40s, 50s, 60s, into today, the antagonist is always a very dark, evil person.
Some kind of dark, evil person.
They market it as the Disney villains. They love you to hate Captain Hook or Ursula. They want you to hate those characters. But in this one, they're just embarrassed.
You know, I wonder, this is a little bit, some elements of old Hollywood here, where maybe they're trying to stomp out their careers. I wonder, you could say, hey, we don't want to make a movie with you. That's fine. Should they let them go and let them these beloved characters from this great film go out there and make some more magic someplace else? Hey, if we don't want to, that's fine. But just let me go work.
What's wrong with that? Right. It's America. All right, let's take a quick break. We have news coming up in just a little bit. Kurt Wagner's going to join us later to talk television, and then a great article from Huffington Post. We'll find out how the NFL is convincing your children to be fans for life. Stick around. It's Bill Leff and it's Dane Neal in for Wendy on WGN. Steve, it sounded like for a minute you had to look at your name tag to see if you were, in fact, Steve Bertrand.
Well, it's Friday. I'm not always me on Fridays.
I get that.
Sometimes I call it in.
I don't blame you.
No.
Hi, everybody. Speaking about calling it in, Kurt Wagner, every Friday, sits there in the Kurt Wagner chair, and he tells us about TV. Kurt is with TVShowPatrol.com, but I looked at Kurt's contract, and it says if Wendy doesn't feel like coming in,
right.
Kurt doesn't have to come in. How about that, Kurt?
You want him to be comfortable.
Yep.
I'm phoning it in today.
Hey, we've all done it. How are you?
I'm recovering from my first ever Hawks game, Blackhawks game.
Did you go last night?
Yeah, I did.
You saw an exciting game, a 4-3 win.
It was a great game. It was amazing. Yeah.
Why did it take you so long to see a Blackhawks game, Kurt?
Because I'm POA.
Oh, all right.
I thought you were just unaware that the team was there.
The team keeps winning championships.
Yeah, yeah. I've always been a fan.
And was the experience what you expected? It's wall-to-wall excitement when you go to the United Center to see the Blackhawks, right?
It is, but I was kind of above it all because I was in a skybox.
That's not bad at all. That's good seats. Good for you.
It was nice. It was great.
Yeah. You know. I'm glad you enjoyed yourself, and now obviously you're hungover.
No, I'm not, actually. I didn't even drink, but there was free food and booze.
Oh, there was?
I have a bit of a food hangover, I guess.
And you hung away, you stayed away from the free booze. Good for you.
I did.
You're setting a good example for kids like Dane.
I like to hear it, Kurt, so thanks for keeping that message going.
Thanks for doing that. All right, so now it's December 2nd, Kurt, and that means for the next 3.5 weeks, we'll be seeing a whole lot of Christmas specials. It's already started, right? Christmas specials are already running.
Oh, yeah. They started a month ago.
The Hallmark Channel started about a month ago, didn't they?
Yeah. They do something every Saturday and Sunday, pretty much.
Yeah.
Either on Hallmark or there's the spinoff Hallmark Mysteries and Movies. They have their own Christmas movies as well.
You like to hear, especially with more channels, more outlets, them creating new and exciting Christmas-related and holiday-related programming for us to enjoy. So we're not just rehashing that Ed Asner
right.
film where he gets back with his family. I mean,
no.
We've seen it.
The Gathering?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that one.
Yep. Ed Asner's in a new one.
Oh, what's the new Ed Asner Christmas special?
I can't
special?
Remember which one it was, but I saw it was on the other night.
Is that part of a flashback or one of those like Tupac kind of hologram things? Is Ed Asner still alive?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
He's fine.
Good for him.
I just know on any given night over at the Hallmark Channel this time of year, you can see Meredith Baxter and Steve Guttenberg as divorced parents who just happen to meet each other and fall in love, and it's beautiful every time. I love that.
You know, I think it's amazing. They get a lot of name people for these movies.
Who's the biggest name you can think of on one of the Hallmark holiday movies?
Besides Ed Asner, let me.
Yeah. not that you, I'm not trying. I'm not. It's not a challenge. Name a bigger actor than Ed Asner because you won't be able to. But who's on par?
What shows was he in? Lou Grant. That was
Mary Tyler Moore and okay. Lou Grant. Yeah.
What's her name? Shirley MacLaine was just on one.
Was she really?
Yeah. Yeah. She was just in one. It was called The Christmas something or other.
The Christmas something or
she
other.
She was an angel. Oh. She was an angel.
Oh, okay. Well, you figure there'd be some product placement psychic book somewhere in the frame.
Yeah, because
she was training an angel. And, you know, the other angel was Kristen Davis from
Sex and the City.
Yeah.
That's a good cast. All right.
Yeah.
Now, I Love Lucy is running their Christmas special. I Love Lucy, for people who don't know, was on a long, long time ago, and yet tonight is the I Love Lucy Christmas special. What is that all about?
Yeah, I love this. I love this. Every year they re-show the Christmas episode, which they colorized, I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
And then they add a new colorized episode.
And that changes every year.
And that changes every year because they keep doing one each year.
Yeah.
And so the new one this year is called Lucy Gets in Pictures, and it's the one where she... she's going to be in this movie finally, and she has to wear this enormous feathered headdress, and she keeps falling down the staircase.
Oh.
It's too big. and I totally remember this episode, because I've watched I Love Lucy reruns for 1,000 years.
Is William Frawley as cranky when he's in color as he is when he's in black and white?
Yes,
excellent question.
He is.
He was one of the most unhappy characters in the history of TV, always perturbed about something.
Well, yeah, I think even the interactions, right, those were funny, but they were able to make, I think, more entertainment and humorous entertainment with less, where you said that
right.
headdress, she falls downstairs. You get 20, 30 minutes out of that. Or I remember the one where she put in too much soap in the washing machine.
Always a fun
And the
fun,
bubbles
yeah.
came out. Boom, that's all you needed.
Well, that and the Vitamita Vegemin one.
Love it.
That was one of my favorites.
Love it.
And the one where she and Ethel were working at the chocolate factory and the
conveyor belt.
The conveyor belt was going too fast, so they were just stuffing all the chocolates in
yep.
their mouth.
That's just
how
that's
do they write
fun.
That stuff? It's like conveyor belt, just speed it up, boom, done.
She was the best
physical
comic ever.
Yeah, yeah.
I love those shows, and I still love them. So I always look forward to this. I already have that set to record tonight.
What about the one? Remember the episode where Harpo Marx was a guest star, and he had broken into their house because Harpo Marx, I guess, used to do that, just break into people's houses. And she does like a pantomime in front of a mirror with him. He's on one side, and she's on
right.
the other. That's
right.
That's good stuff. They don't do stuff
it
like
is.
That anymore, Kurt.
You never see that.
I love that stuff.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Although on the downside, and my wife pointed this out, because after years and years and years of enjoying I Love Lucy, my wife wouldn't watch it. And I'd say, why? And she said, because there's always the element of she wants to be in a show that Ricky's directing. So she comes in with a fake mustache and her friend also has a fake mustache and her husband doesn't realize it's his wife with a fake mustache.
Well, I don't know.
It's not realistic.
Totally
no, that's all right.
Well, no, but I always wondered if maybe I was or you were, or we were just more perceptive than maybe a good block of the population, because it goes along the lines of that whole, Clark Kent's got glasses on. Oh,
yeah.
I don't recognize him
right.
anymore. That's
right.
what it is.
Right.
Is that possible, or did they just decide, oh, we're having fun here. Let's just go ahead and hope this flies.
What do you think, Kurt?
It's TV. It's fiction. They're just having fun.
Poetic license.
Yeah.
But if you were doing something.
If she's covering up the red hair, then. There's no way somebody
right,
like,
right.
Let me see. Lucy has red hair. Can't be her.
If you were directing,
she had the long nose and she lit a cigarette or something.
Yeah, I remember that.
Fire.
Yeah, But if you were doing something, Dane, and your wife showed up and she just had a fake mustache, you would recognize that it was your wife.
I'd like to think so, Bill, but you never know. She's right. Never tried that.
It's unpredictable. Yeah. All right, so Lucy's show is tonight. The Christmas special is tonight. And then is this true? Is Dick Van Dyke also doing something similar, the Dick Van Dyke show, later on in the in the month?
Well, he's not doing it, but CBS.
CBS is doing it.
Yeah. December 11th. And I think this is the first year they've done the Dick Van Dyke show this way. They're doing two episodes, just like the way they do Lucy.
Colorized?
Yes. And the one is called That's My Boy, and it's when their kid, Richie, is born.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, I remember that one.
Because they might have taken the wrong baby home.
Right.
And it, then the other one is called...
The baby had a mustache, and they didn't recognize him.
Exactly. Right. The other one is Coast to Coast Big Mouth, which Laura says something that's top secret on national television quiz show.
I remember that one, too, about Alan Brady.
Alan Brady has a toupee. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, my God, I just spoiled it.
All right. Yeah, spoiler alert to everybody. All right, so question number one. Why wouldn't CBS run their Christmas episode as one of these two?
I have no idea. That is a good question, and that's a question I have, too, but
yeah.
Nobody is answering me.
And then also, I want to point out that in that first episode you described, That's My Boy, where the Petries may have taken the wrong baby home, it has what they believe is the longest laugh in TV history. There are two things that happened on sitcom history that they say got the longest laugh. One is the Sammy Davis Jr. episode of All in the Family when Archie asks Sammy Davis Jr. if he wants cream or sugar in his eye. I know it needs more of a setup, but that's the punchline. All right, so that got a huge laugh. And then also when you meet the potential wrong parents for Richie Petrie, when they introduce those parents, and I don't want to say what happens there if you haven't seen it.
Is this live studio audience or just the finger gets stuck on the can laugh button?
No, it was a live studio audience, and Carl Reiner has said that is supposed to be the longest laugh in TV history. And it, believe me, if you haven't seen it, it's a very daring punchline for the 1960s. It really is. All right, let's take a quick break. Kurt Wagner's here. His website is tvshowpatrol.com. We're talking TV, and we're also talking Christmas specials. We're right in the heart of them. Don't do it right now. I mean, listen to this, but then, you know.
When you get some time.
When you have a free
moment.
You're
not driving.
Right. I don't want to hurt anybody. Kurt Wagner's here from tvshowpatrol.com. A great, great website if you're a fan of TV. And I think that's pretty much everybody. Kurt, explain this to me. For years and years now, The Walking Dead has been the biggest hit on cable and satellite TV. But now people are stopping their watching habits of The Walking Dead all of a sudden. Because why?
Because they don't like it anymore.
What? What happened?
He's a straight talker.
Well, yeah, this recent season 7 premiere had like 17 million viewers, and then it's dropped off steadily. And this last week, it was just 11 million for the fifth episode.
Wow.
Which is, you know, some people would say, oh, that's still good, but it's quite a drop from, you know, losing 6 million is quite a big deal. And so, there's several reasons. I mean, part of it is I think people are tired of the violence. And maybe they don't like how, you know, the whole story played out with Negan, and his bat, Lucille.
Yeah.
Bashed in a couple people's heads.
And, yeah. In a very, very graphic way.
Yes, very graphic. And also, you know, they've had the main... You know, our team, so to speak, the heroes that we've been following all along, they're all split up these days. And so they're not, you know, they're not together. And they're also sort of being treated badly. and you know, like one of them, Daryl, I think, was locked up for a while. And by
still is.
And,
yeah.
But, and oh, he still is.
Yeah, but that's what the show is. That's what you get when you know that. I mean, there's no surprise. That's what the show's been from day one. Is exactly what you described. So all of a sudden, why are people turning it off? I don't understand it.
Well, I think there's always been at least a little bit of hope, maybe. You know, they face these challenges, but I don't know. I just feel like maybe it's like me. I've sort of tapered off, too. It's
Have
like,
you?
I'm just over it. You know, I'm just, you know, okay, so they keep getting, you know, they keep finding more horrible and horrible people to fight.
Yeah.
Well, and
Well, Kurt, is it possible that maybe it's a combination of great, they need some more writing, maybe an exciting, you know, figure, maybe add in some extra elements that could kind of just kind of perk it up a little bit? Or is it just maybe the beginning of the end of what has been this fascination with zombies? You know, we've always wondered, like, well, what happens with the zombies? Like,
yeah.
How do they stay alive? You know, how do they right. eat? How does that work? And I think people are starting to question that. Maybe the zombies is getting, maybe it's getting old.
Well, and that whole, you know, genre stuff is so cyclical anyway, so it, you might just be that you're right. It might just be that, too. you know, there's a lot of reasons, and I guess, you know, some critics even say, you know, it's just the writing's not as good as it used to be, and, you know.
Kurt, why would zombies want to eat human flesh? Why wouldn't zombies want to eat whatever they enjoyed when they weren't zombies? Like a zombie of me, I would eat Pop-Tarts a lot. I love Pop-Tarts. Why are zombies so bent on human flesh? Maybe that's what they need to do, is change their diet.
Maybe so. Maybe they should eat grass, because yeah. like that's going
that away. Would make the show better, I bet, if they just grazed instead of the grazing
and
dead.
They didn't bother the humans. Well,
yeah.
These days it's just the humans killing the other humans. So
yeah, that's it. Yep.
You know, the zombies are sort of.
Is AMC
around.
Nervous?
My brother always asked me why. You know, why don't they just run faster?
Right.
The zombies can't run.
Right.
Yeah. See, these. I think the movies that were the most compelling, that were kind of in that zombie genre, you know, World War Z. Remember that, where
that
the zombies
really
were really fast and crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, or what was the other 28 Days?
Yeah.
You know, you had some of these where the zombies were scary. The whole kind of shuffling zombie that you could sort of avoid, only if you get caught in a room in a corner.
Yeah, at a party.
Right. Otherwise, you got to talk your way out of it. Otherwise, these zombies are just too easy. I think they need to step it up and make the zombies, because I don't think we're scared of the zombies anymore.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're just grossed out.
That's it. That's it exactly. Now, on the flip side of this, Westworld over on HBO has their season finale on Sunday. This thing started out good and just keeps getting better and better. There's a great surprise every week on Westworld.
Yeah, and it's been renewed for a second season, too, so it'll be back. Yay.
Now, go on. What were you going to say?
No. Go ahead.
They're just going to extend the yay.
They recently, I was going to echo your sentiments of yay. Recently, one of the major characters, it appears that he or she is no longer on the show. You don't have to confirm or deny this, but I would hate to lose that character. You know, maybe you have some inside information. I'm hoping that person who had appeared last week might no longer be with the series. I'm hoping we didn't see what we thought we saw. Can you say or not say?
Sure.
All right. That's all you need to say.
I don't know.
Well, I know it's not Yul Brynner.
Either way.
It is not Yul Brynner.
Right. For those out there wondering.
His gunslinger.
Yul Brynner will be back in the finale.
All right. We'll look forward to that. And then one more, because every time you're on, we get tons of texts from people saying, when is Vikings coming back?
Yeah.
On the History Channel. It did come back?
Yeah, it came back. What's today? Friday? Yeah, Wednesday. And it's amazing. This, you know, they're doing 20 episodes this season, and they split it into two.
Yeah.
They've always done 10, usually, but so now there's basically two seasons in one. And this season, you know, Ragnar Lothbrok has been the main...
You just said that backwards, I think. Can you say that front way so we can understand you? What did you just say?
He's been the conquering Viking so far in the three seasons previous, and now his sons are all old. They're all adult age now.
Oh.
So they're coming up. You know, we're going to see their story.
Ragnar's boys.
And in history, his sons, two of his sons at least, become huge, big time leaders that I know of, and do even more epic things than he did. So it's just getting better and better with all these new characters and everything. And I've seen the first three of this new half season, and it's amazing.
Lots of pillaging.
Yeah.
Good pillaging
scenes. There will be pillaging.
All right.
But, and there'll be some surprises too. I think there'll be some crazy.
You know, Ragnar.
Yeah.
Ragnar.
Well, you know, his son, who I interviewed this guy, this Danish actor named Alex Anderson.
Yeah.
And he plays his son, Ivar, who's called Ivar the Boneless.
Oh.
Because he was born without the use of his legs.
Oh, no.
They called him Ivar the Boneless, but as if he didn't have bones in his legs.
Yeah.
But this guy is amazing. The actor's really amazing, and his scenes with his dad are really good. But just the history behind Ivar the Boneless, who becomes this great leader even though he can't walk. And we sort of get to see how his dad is helping him to become the man he becomes.
And that's Vikings, and it's on the History Channel.
Yeah, right. On Wednesday nights now.
Kurt, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next Friday. Thanks for being on. That's Kurt
Talk
Wagner.
Later,
absolutely. His website, again, TVShowPatrol.com. We'll take a quick break, and then there will be some news. Stick around. It's Bill Effen. It's Dane Neal in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. Kim, thanks so much. It's Bill Effen. Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy Snyder. Wendy's fine, just taking a scheduled day off. She will be back on Monday. George Dorman joins us right now by way of the telephone. George is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He's worked for the Huffington Post, Sports Illustrated, Los Angeles Times, and more. He wrote a piece that I read yesterday and loved for Huffington Post called Hooked for Life. George, thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good. All right. First of all, I just mentioned this. I read this piece, and I was spellbound by it. What a great job you did. Let's talk a little bit about that piece that ran in the Huffington Post yesterday, but you can still find it very easily, called Hooked for Life. And essentially what it is the marketing tactics that have been employed by the NFL to snare kids as young as 6 years old and make them kind of a fan for life, correct?
Yeah, there's sort of – the NFL is doing something that's unprecedented in the history of sort of – sports, professional sports leagues. They are using tactics that, you know, big tobacco, fast food companies, you know, oil and gas companies, big coal have used over the years to get in front of kids, to persuade kids, and to persuade mom, you know, so that they can bolster their numbers of fans and players.
You know, immediately as I'm reading this, and you kind of, it kind of comes up in the article, the first thing that came to mind was at some point a tobacco company said, let's get a character, let's get Joe Cool. Now, this may appeal to current smokers, and it may not, but what it'll really do is it'll be like a beacon of light to kids to go, oh, look, there's a lovable cartoon camel, and he's smoking, and that hooks kids into their product. And the NFL's doing kind of something similar, right?
Yeah, they created a television show called Rush Zone that's sort of this very ridiculous promotional device. I mean, they have these little things called rushers. They're these little creatures. They look like Oompa Loompas or something that they, and they have those in Happy Meals, and they have, you know, they put those things in schools, in lesson plans. So it's not dissimilar. I mean, these are marketing tactics that they didn't invent, but that they went out and grabbed from other, you know, corporations that sell a dangerous product and are employing.
Well, George, and I know it's sports entertainment. Is there like an age group? It's kind of a threshold you need to get past where if you can get the kid to be, you know, like smoking, they say, if you can make bad decisions in your teenage years, you'll be a smoker till you're 30 or 40 and decide to quit. Is there like an age group that they're looking at where they can show them something kind of bright and shiny and get them hooked by a certain point they'll be around for the duration?
Yes. So NFL knows this. They've done research on this. They know that the majority, vast majority of their diehard fans play at a young age or become fans at a young age. So they're looking at like 6 to 12 is their sweet spot. They want to get to kids 6 to 12. So, for example, you know, when they created a bunch of what are called sponsored education materials, which are, you know, sort of bad lesson plans that they get into schools, right, that say things like, here's a hypothesis, pick a winner of a football game and then watch the game if you were right, right? So, like, those things, they're going fourth graders and you know, though that elementary school age is where they're targeting kids.
And that sponsored contest had a huge payoff, didn't it? I mean, it was teaching kids how to gamble, but it had a huge payoff, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, they've been doing this. They're called SEM, Sponsored Education Materials, and they've been doing it for years, and they are comedy. When you look at them, I mean, you know, like one of the final lessons is have a kitchen table tailgate party at your house with your parents and watch a game. And then your parents can quiz you with questions like, how many NFL teams have an animal as a mascot? Mm-hmm. Like, that is not a triumph of the scientific method. So, you know, this is what they do. And they have a fantasy football game for 6 to 12 year olds that forever was giving out huge cash prizes. So you'd have a kid who were rooting for Jay Cutler on Sunday because they were hoping to win that Xbox or that $1,000 weekly prize from the NFL.
Well, it's only been recently that there's been kind of an acknowledgement from the NFL that gambling is a big part of the sport. That's only been recent where they've said, like, well, yeah, you know, I guess that sort of matters in kind of the big picture of keeping it interesting for everybody. You know, the obligation to form team alliances has been kind of traditionally on the parents. You know, you'd say, like, hey, son, you know, you like the Bears, or let's go to the game and do all those kind of things. Do they care? You brought up that cartoon. Do they care how much they actually know how the game works? Football is kind of a complicated game. I'm surprised. You know, my wife's been a long time. We've watched so many games, and occasionally she'll say something like, is that good? Where you're like, you really don't know how this game works.
Right.
Yet she's buying jerseys and watching. Do they care if people, if the kids end up knowing how the game works, or just that they're fans and support it monetarily?
A little bit of both. You know, some of the education materials they've done have like primers for the teachers, and they have to actually know how the game works to teach the game. So actually you have teachers who will be explaining to kids what INT means or TD means, or explaining to kids, you know, the rules of the game, like you get a first down after 10 yards, the field is 100 yards long. So they actually use those education materials to teach the basics of the game to kids who might have no interest at all in football, but they have to learn it if they want to get a good grade on the educational materials. So I think they do care about teaching the game. They just want you indoctrinated. And so if you only indoctrinate in their fantasy, their online virtual world where you can have fun and put up virtual things on your avatar, that's also getting it into your psyche.
George Dorman is our guest. He's written a magnificent piece for the Huffington Post called Hooked for Life that tells you in incredible detail how the NFL is doing everything they can to hook your 6- and 7-year-old son or daughter and get them interested in the NFL, because if they hook you now, you're going to be a fan for life. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? We'll discuss that next. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. Stay here. It's WGN. It's Bill Leff, and it's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy, who has the day off. We are talking with George Dorman. George is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who's worked for Huffington Post, Sports Illustrated, the LA Times, and a whole lot more. I urge you to read his piece, Hooked for Life, that talks about the clever, very inventive marketing scheme of the NFL to hook your children and make them fans forever. George, if you wouldn't mind, walk us through the marketing firm that they're using. This is a company called Brandissimo. What do we know about Brandissimo?
Yeah, what a great name, right?
Yeah.
It was started by a couple guys from Disney who had worked with Disney and done television and games and stuff for different corporations. And these people are experts on, you know, the way they bill it is they're experts at grabbing kids' attention across multiple platforms. So, you know, it was this sort of youth marketing agency, boutique agency out of Southern California, not the kind of ad agency you would think would be working with a big whale of a client like the NFL.
Yeah.
But the NFL went to them and got them, and they worked on some really sort of forward-thinking projects. You know, not just a website with the little games and stuff on it. They did that. But also a virtual world where, you know, you could go, your kids could create an avatar and go to Seahawks land or Bears land and dress yourself up and interact with other fans or have chats with players where, of course, things like concussions would be mentioned. Mm-hmm. So they created this, you know, and then Brandissimo helped them promote the biggest one that we write about, which is a fantasy game, fantasy football game for kids. So it was this agency that, you know, brought the NFL's marketing efforts to kids sort of into the new millennium. It really went from, you know, hey, the usual suspects when it comes to, you know, to getting after kids, to going to where kids are, like a virtual world or online. And on television, creating a television show them on Nicktoons, going to where kids are and grabbing.
Well, you can see where they want to create specific roles for their future fans. One is, you know, a fan for the products and obviously watching, you know, attending the games, and also on the gambling side, the fantasy football side. The thing that's a little bit different is the participation. You kind of brought it up a little bit, and the NFL has not taken any kind of real ownership of the whole concussion thing, and that actually, and Bill, you mentioned the smoking thing, is that the activity that they're promoting is essentially hazardous for you. They do things like Play 60, which I think undeniably positive, get out there, run around, be active. But, you know, as a dad of a 10-year-old, I wouldn't, based on the information we have now, I wouldn't want him to play football,
right?
Because I'd be afraid of the injury. It's kind of like boxing was many, many, many years ago. Like, we love watching it, but you wouldn't want your kids to play. How do they deal with that part of it?
You know, they sort of muddy the waters is what they do. You know, I went to a mom's clinic. We went to a mom's clinic in Birmingham, Alabama. I went to a family football clinic. It was in Chicago, in Grant Park during draft weekend. And what you see there is a pitch that they make that is taking the information that we have and just muddying it a little bit. You know, they say things like, oh, you know, football's no more dangerous than riding a bike. That's what the data shows. Well, that's not true if you look at it closely. It's no more dangerous up until 10 if you include girls and boys in the pool of kids. But if you look at boys only, it's more dangerous. And after 10, it's more dangerous in terms of head trauma. So they don't tell you that, right? And then they used, like, emotional manipulation, emotional branding to change the discussion. Instead of saying, you know, is football safe, they say things like, are you going to stop your kid from pursuing his dream? Right.
It's all in the wording, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is a tactic that clever marketers, have used for a long time. But it just feels really bad when you're there and you see somebody from the NFL making this pitch based on emotion and really muddying what we know about the dangers of football.
George, since your piece was published, Hooked for Life, have you had people say to you, hey, this is the way everything is marketed. There isn't a business anywhere that doesn't want to get somebody when they're young and hold them for their whole lives. Why is the NFL any different from any other business?
I think that's yes. People have said that, and I'm on Reddit right now because I'm doing a chat there, and people are saying it over and over again. How can you make that comparison?
Yeah. This
is just the way big businesses operate, right? And it's true. It is true. But no professional sports league is doing this. The NBA is not doing it. Major League Baseball is not doing it.
Because of ethics or other, is there a reason they're not doing it? Or will they look at the NFL and say, boy, this is working really good for football. We should implement the same.
I don't think they have to do it because their sport is not, they're not selling a product that is that dangerous. I mean, there are dangers in every sport. But, you know, the NFL will say things like the concussion risks are just the same in soccer. Well, that's just not true. When you look at the potential for brain, if you say instead of concussions, you say head trauma. DTE.
Yeah.
It is not true. So the others are not doing this because they're not faced with a product that is clearly dangerous, and they're not trying to sort of obfuscate what, you know, the truth is about their product. So I think if people want to say, look, the NFL is just like Big Tobacco or coal industry or Chevron or somebody like that, you know, McDonald's, they're not going to be wrong in that the marketing tactics and the way they're going after kids are very similar. I don't know that we've always thought of the NFL as being a corporation like those corporations.
You know, you wonder, and here's where you can kind of look at it, and I want to get your thoughts on this, is how much time, effort, energy, dollars are they paying towards coming up with those excuses or those studies that, hey, this is no more dangerous than riding a bike. Yes, if you just ride your bike into a wall. Like
right.
all the time,
yeah.
You know, that's the way that it is, because it's so weird to say, and I'm the biggest football fan that I know. So this is coming from a position of I love the sport. I watch the sport. I've been a fan my whole life. But you look at it. Yeah. Is that you've got to come up with some of these, I don't know, answers for the concerns that people would have in this day and age with the studies where they've got to spend time saying, oh, no, it's not this. And it reminds you of a little bit of that tobacco stuff. Remember, before they put those labels on, they had doctors come out and say, you know, before I do a heart surgery, I relax with a Lucky Strike. I mean, you mm-hmm. saw all of that stuff out there on the research end.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on it. And I'm a huge football guy. You know, I went to Notre Dame. I played in high school. I mean, you know, it's been part of my life forever, and it has taken, you know, me and I'm sure a lot of people like us, you know, it sort of not by surprise, but it's been a hard adjustment for us to view the sport and things like the NFL or the NCAA in a new way. But I think that, you know, when I talk to, you know, former NFL players like Nate Jackson or Kyle Turley, you know, what they most want is they want the NFL to just come out and say it. Look, this is a really dangerous sport. And so now we're going to take big steps to help make sure that it is significantly less dangerous. You know, things like heads up football program and things like that, they look at those as just marketing devices. They say those are not making the game safer. And the data backs up that it's not making the game safer for kids. So you have to say, hey, look at, you know, just be honest. It's really dangerous, and let's protect kids as much as we can instead of trying to you know, sort of slithers through.
You almost have to rip the Band-Aid off and just kind of do that, right? We understand that the sport is changing. Bill and I were talking off the air, you know, Super Bowl 1 and 2, the offensive lines were like regular size people. You know, they weren't, you know, 6'5", 350 yeah. pounds and giant size people. But I think in what do you think? They can't come out and just own it and move forward, because then they'll have to admit that they knew there was a problem, as opposed to we're fighting the fact that there might be. And then you've got, there's a lot of dollars, I guess, right, that need to be paid out at some point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing that they're doing that I think is really interesting is they are throwing a lot of money into NFL swag and are promoting it and have done a really good job of making it available to cash-strapped recreational departments. They are pushing flag football, and more kids are playing flag football. You know, the way this is eventually going to go, if, whether they want to admit it or not, in my opinion, is at some point here, we are going to have flag football for kids until high school. There will be no Pop Warner. There will be no, you know, what, a peewee football. It's just simply too dangerous for kids that young age. So that's where I think, you know, even the concussion experts who are really harsh critics of the NFL say, hey, I'd be okay with that. If they stopped playing tackle football when they're 6, 10, 12, you know, and they just waited, I'd be okay with that. And I think that's where this is headed. It's going to take a while. That's where they're headed. But the NFL would be smart to just fully embrace that idea.
George, really quickly, you mentioned McDonald's. I just want to point this out. McDonald's is without question the most successful fast food franchise in history. I remember a couple of years ago, they asked one of the top bigwigs over at McDonald's what was the best move McDonald's ever made, and they said the Happy Meal, for the simple reason is it got 4- and 5- and 6-year-old kids indoctrinated into the McDonald's world, and once they had them, just like the NFL, they never let go. So this is an unprecedented, but boy, the NFL is doing everything they can to win your kids over.
Including creating a Happy Meal.
Yeah.
The NFL had their television show, and they got a Happy Meal for their little NFL guys, their little rushers, and kids could go in and get. So yes, it's not unprecedented, but it is still kind of amazing to me how the NFL has chosen, you know, this script.
George, what a great piece. It's called Hooked for Life. You can find it on Huffington Post. You do a fine job over there. Keep up the good work, and thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
That's George Dorman, Huffington Post. Again, the article is called Hooked for Life. Kim, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. Wendy has the day off. Don't panic. It was a scheduled day off. She's going to be back on Monday. My oldest and dearest friend in the world, Jane Monzuris, joins us right now in studio.
I'm so happy to be here.
Finally. We've talked about this forever. As long as we've known each other, we said someday you and I have got to co-host together.
And you've made the date. So thanks to Wendy, I'm here. Finally, yes. We get to do this.
Yes, yes. Truth be told, you and I met just under a minute ago.
Yes.
We've never met before.
I ran into the studio and said, hi.
You have the pleasant aroma of chlorine around you. I don't know what you're doing to make yourself smell like a high school swimming pool, but whatever you're doing, continue, because it's
just
fantastic.
Just came from swim practice.
Did actually. You just have swim practice?
Actually, I was just in a pool at FFC. We were doing a shoot. So I host Living Healthy Chicago on WGN TV.
Bing, 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 bing. People love that show, that Living Healthy Chicago.
We want to learn to live healthy, and you can do it so many ways. So we were just at a shoot about working out with knee problems and exercises you could do. One of those was in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, Jane, can you get in the pool? And I'm like, right now?
Do it. Why
All right.
not?
So I jumped in the pool, and then I came here. Which
well,
is thank
why you for doing
I
that.
Smell like chlorine.
I'm one of those people, Jane, that loves the smell. I know chlorine is a polarizing aroma, but mm-hmm. for me, that and vanilla are my two favorites.
So I've lucked out.
Yep.
So it was either vanilla or chlorine, and I picked the right one.
If you swam in a pool of vanilla and came in, I don't know what it would be like in here.
You couldn't even speak.
I'd be bananas.
You're drooling.
How long have you been the host of Living Healthy Chicago?
So 6 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
That's a long time.
A long time to keep a job in TV, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It really is.
And I've learned a lot, too. And we talked to a lot of doctors, a lot of inspiring people that have overcome medical, you know, challenges.
Yeah.
And we just learned a lot. Nutrition, health, fitness. So it's a great show.
What's the biggest mistake people are making right now? What's the one thing people could do that you say, that's easy. You could fix that in a day. What is it?
As far as like living a healthy life,
yeah,
move.
Just
stay
go
active.
Somewhere else.
Stay active.
Oh, move! You mean just physically? I thought you meant get out of Chicago. Are you
move.
Kidding?
Yeah,
this place.
It's not sunny today.
But you have to stay active.
Every person we talk to, the number one thing to stay healthy, every doctor too, you know, keep your blood pressure lower, is to stay active.
Yeah.
Move. Just move 20 minutes a day. Even if you're not, I don't like to go to the gym. I don't want to work out. Fine. Walk for 20 minutes.
That's all.
Figure it out. Yeah.
You get that done. Let me ask you a question. I don't know if you know Kevin. He's our producer.
Kevin's fabulous.
Every day for lunch,
so wonderful.
Kevin has a tub of butter. He does this 5 days a week, a big tub of butter, sticks his hand in and just eats butter. That can't be good for him.
I love butter.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So that is good for him.
I could swim around in butter. Are you really eating the butter?
Well, I usually do it in stick form. Don't be silly, Bill.
Right.
Let's be serious here.
A stick of butter.
Have you tried fried butter? Just drop that stick right in a vat of oil.
Do you bread it first?
You can bread it.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great. For
so again,
Kevin, it's perfect. Everybody else, don't do it.
The show is called Living Healthy Chicago, but your advice to Kevin is fry up some butter
and
enjoy.
Well, look at Kevin. He can take a little bit more. But I would say don't eat the butter. But, you know, on occasion, everything in moderation, if you're having a big family party and you're pretty good all week, you know, put the butter in your pasticho.
What happens this time of year, Jane? It's the holidays, and there's cookies and there's cake and stuff everywhere. And people who are careful most of the year in December, they just let it all go, don't they?
They go nuts.
What is that? That's going to ruin you forever, isn't it?
No, it's not actually. So here's the deal: if you're careful all year round, it's very, very unlikely that you're going to lose it all during December. Now, you may have an extra drink, you may have that extra cookie, and that's okay too. Just be mindful of what you're eating. I think during the day prior to doing that. And if you're going to let it all hang loose, let it all hang loose.
Do
get
it.
Back to your physical fitness routine, you know, the next day or the next week.
But you see this, don't you? I belong to a health club, and I have for years. And every year in January, it's jam-packed with people with really good intentions.
Yes.
But then around February 5th, 6th, 7th,
over it.
They've given up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give up.
I would say don't go at it too hard in the beginning, because you'll have that beginner burnout and you're like, oh, this isn't fun for me anymore. I hate to sweat.
Yep.
You know, go in moderation. Go once or twice a week, and then it'll start becoming a habit. And then once it becomes something you like to do, it'll change the way you feel. Like think about those endorphins that you get when you're working out. You're like, I'm always in a good mood. This is the best drug ever. Well, that's because you're happy. It's because you're working out. So you'll finally get that. If you give it a little bit of time, don't burn out.
And for people in Chicago, now the weather here in Chicago is bad more than half the year.
Yeah,
it gets
tough.
Bad, and it stays bad for months and months. But don't you find you look forward to, you say to yourself, I'm going to the gym 2-3 days a week. I look forward to those times because I am, like you said, I'm moving and I'm doing stuff. That's good.
For the going to the gym?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
especially during the winter months when you can't do stuff outside.
And the thing about it is you get to the gym, you're freezing cold. You're like, I don't want to be in my gym clothes. I'm too cold. But the second you start getting warmed up and the second you start working out and exercising and feeling the heat and feeling the burn, you're like, I don't even feel like it's winter. I feel like it's summer. I'm feeling warm inside and out. So it's something to look forward to.
Have you ever let yourself go? Have you ever just been in awful shape and said, well, what's become of me? Has that ever happened?
In the last month.
Just this month you're doing it?
You know, lately, sometimes if you have an injury or you're kind of achy, and it happens when you get older, you're like, why does my hip hurt all of a sudden? Or why do my knees hurt? Now, a lot of that is because you're not maybe working out properly or you got a little bit lazy. Sometimes if you're too busy, the workout doesn't always happen for you, even though I say 20 minutes, just at least get moving. So, I mean, we all go through the ups and downs, but I think that if it's in you and you feel dedicated to feeling good, you're not going to forget working out.
Yep.
So,
here's a little story. This happened to me a few years ago. I tore my labrum, just like Jay Cutler, except I had a higher quarterback rating than he does.
Right.
So I tore my labrum and I couldn't work out for several months.
Yeah.
And then I usually work out about 3 days a week. I went from that to not working out for 5 months. And then when I did, for the next week and a half or 2 weeks, I was so stiff, you know, because you used muscles that I hadn't used in so long. Is there some way around that? Is there something I could have done to prevent it? Just for like 2 weeks, I was just incredibly stiff. What could I have done to prevent that?
Just keep at it. You know, stretch out. Do a little bit longer of a warm-up before you dive into all those. Because you're gonna be achy. You're going to be sore. If you haven't used those muscles in a long time, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But the good news is, then your body got used to it, and then you weren't sore anymore, and you were able to get back to your workout, right?
Yep.
Question is, if you had the torn shoulder, why didn't you do leg workouts?
I could have. Yeah, I probably could have. Yeah. I gave myself that. No, I shouldn't work out at all for 5 months.
I need
but,
to rest.
Yeah,
this is a good time for me to
retrospect,
take a break. Yeah.
That would have been a better
thing. Listen, I do the same thing. Like if I have like a lower body injury, if my knees are hurting, you can always do upper body. But sometimes you're like, okay, well, I just really need to rest. And listen, the biggest thing is listen to your body.
Yeah.
If you're coming back from an injury, if you are starting to work out all over again, or it's your very big, you know, first time working out, listen to your body. If it's too achy and it's too sore, take a break, or
it'll
just
communicate
a little bit
that to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Jane Manzouris is here. She's filling in for Wendy Snyder. It's a scheduled day off. Don't panic. She's coming back on Monday. We'll take a quick break and then a whole lot more. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is your best bet. It's Bill and Jane in for Wendy on WGN. Jane Manzouris is here. She knows a little something about WGN-TV. Her show, Living Healthy Chicago, just celebrated its sixth year. Do you know beyond this, Jane, how deep it'll go?
It's renewed for next year. We're doing it again.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Actually, it's been on longer than 6 years. I've been hosting it six. I think it's been on eight.
Who was on before you?
Lou Kanellis.
Don't know him.
Yeah, you don't
Never
know
heard of Lou
Never
Kanellis.
Heard of Lou. Love Lou.
Yeah, he's
Love
great.
So Jane, he said to me, Janie, you can do a push-up, right? Here, do this show. I'm like, okay, great. I can
That's how you get the job on Living Healthy? You had to do a push-up?
Yeah. Lou was like, I'm done. I'm going to Fox. I got a big gig. Right. He's like, this is for you. Do a push-up. Show him you can do it. I'm like, okay. Whatever you say, Lou, I'll do it.
Can I tell you the greatest thing about Lou Kanellis? I've known Lou for a long time. Any game, any sport that Lou is talking about, he explains that it is a must-win game, that this game must be won or the season is for naught. If the Bulls don't win this game, if the Bears, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Hawks, if they don't win, forget it, the season's over.
God, I love his passion.
It's immediate.
I love it. And I love the way he explains the game. When I need to know information, sometimes, you know, I'll do radio. We could talk about sports, and that's how I get my info. But when I'm not on the radio constantly, like, I need to find out what's going on. I'm calling Lou.
Yeah.
And he'll, like, talk to me as if I'm on the radio. He'd be like, well, Jane, this is a must-win situation for the Bulls. Like, Lou, it's like their 10th game.
You.
Yeah.
And then because he comes from that world of broadcasting, he takes breaks every 15 minutes. He'll talk to you for 15.
Yep.
He'll throw it to a commercial, which is weird because it's a phone conversation. And then he comes back
still
and talk
on the
to
air. Well, like,
I know.
Lou,
I don't get
come
it.
Back. Yeah.
I don't understand that at all. You and I grew up about 10 or 12 minutes from each other.
You grew up in Oak Forest.
I was in Oak Forest and you were in Orland Park.
Orland Park.
The golf capital of the world.
Why is it the golf capital?
Because they're lying. It's
well,
not.
You got Silver Lake right there, and that's a phenomenal course.
It says on the water tower,
I know,
golf capital of the world, but I and, not positive it is.
Of the world. So this is, I love that you brought this up, because people that I bring to visit Orland Park, you know, like my boyfriend that's from Buffalo, New York, comes and he's a big golfer, and he's like, Orland Park, the golf capital of the world. Why?
Nobody knows.
Yeah, nobody knows.
No one's talking
and
about it.
You haven't figured it out.
No, I lived there. We moved in to Oak Forest when I was four, and they put that sign on the Orland Park water tower around 1970, 71, and everybody just went, it's on the water tower. It must
be
true.
Yeah.
It's not like the internet where you can put anything on the internet. If something's on a water tower, Jane.
It's been painted on.
Right.
And that's a tough job right there.
That's
you
the
paint
difference.
You painted on the water tower, and it's been there since, I mean, we moved in 1972.
Yeah.
And it's been there ever since, so it must be. But, you know, you think about the courses we have around in Orland Park proper, and I'm thinking
there's a couple.
Well, is Silver Lake, is Cock Hill in Orland? No.
Do you know what it says on the Worth Water Tower?
No.
The Friendly Village.
Oh, well, it's friendly in Worth.
It is.
Yeah, I like Worth. I like to go through it.
Some would say too friendly.
In Worth?
Yeah.
Hey, can you be too friendly?
I have found on several occasions that the friendliness there was way above
so
the minimum daily.
Yeah. You had to go back to Oak Forest.
Too friendly here.
So I used to, when I was a kid, cheer for the Tinley Park Bulldogs.
Oh, they were our rivals.
Yeah, we played the Oak Forest Raiders all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were our rivals.
We always got beat.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
The Raiders were good.
Yeah.
Just as they are now in real football, the Raiders are doing well too.
Yeah. Did you live in Orland Park before it was, like now when you drive through Orland, there's a lot of malls and strip malls and shopping centers. It's just continuous when you drive around there. But in the early days of Orland, it was farmland.
There was, so I was right at 151st Street and 80th Avenue, like in this little, right by the tower that said the golf.
Yeah,
you know,
golf
I
capital
lived
of the world.
In that neighborhood, Catalina it was called, or still is. There was no houses on the other side of 80th Avenue.
Yeah.
So there was absolutely nothing. It was all farmland.
Yeah.
I think Orland Square Mall was there. Maybe not. I mean, I was two, so I don't
know. Oh, maybe. All right, maybe.
Yeah. But no, there was nothing. And I've seen it grown, and I've seen all the streets get wide. And, yeah. You know, everything's moving around.
Because you have to think for the farmers who live there, this was culture shock. They were used to just growing rhubarb or whatever they grow in Orland Park. And then all of a sudden, there was just car dealerships on every corner.
Yeah, and golf courses on every other corner.
Well, they have to.
Miniature golf.
Miniature golf capital of the world.
Keep up with that. When I was little, we saw a plane crash into one of those farm fields from the back of my house. And my mom was in one room and my dad was out painting. I mean, I was like, you know.
What size plane was it?
It was a little plane.
Just a small one? Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone came out and I saw it happen. And I was a little kid. I was maybe like 6 or 7. And I saw this plane take a nosedive into the cornfield. And now. I saw it happen.
Wow.
And my mom just screamed, Lou, are you all right? She thought
Lou Kanellis?
No, Lou is dad. All the Greeks are named Lou, Nick, George.
Pete.
Yeah, Pete. Yeah. So she said, are you all right? And I said, no, a plane just crashed. But she said, what do you mean a plane crashed? But it was right there in that golf. Not the golf. Well, it was close to the golf, but it was in the cornfields.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And now there's houses there.
Did you live in Orland Park? And I don't know exactly how old you are, but at some point there was a fireworks company in Orland Park that had an explosion. Now, I lived in Oak Forest, which was about 10 or 12 minutes away, but we all thought, because it was after school one day, we all thought that there was an earthquake. And you don't get a whole lot of earthquakes in the southwest suburbs, but just because of the noise and our buildings all shook. And I was at a friend's house, we ran out in the middle of the street and other neighbors were out in the middle of the street thinking, it's the end of days. We read about this in the Bible and now it's the end.
It's happening.
But it was the fireworks company that made the fireworks for, White Sox Park, whenever.
Yeah, sure.
Remember the White Sox hits a home run, they blow off fireworks. It was that fireworks company and it was such a jolt that you could feel it all that far away.
I don't remember that. What year was that? Do you remember?
Sometime in the 70s is all I would remember. I don't know. I can't pinpoint the exact time, but sometime in the mid 70s.
Yeah, I can only remember as far back as,
you being born.
Yeah.
You can't remember beyond that.
Then I got nothing.
I remember I was -3 that day, but yeah, what a crazy day that was.
I was in the middle of the street. You didn't see me.
But for us, like when that happened, like you go, well, is it that big of a deal? It's just a fireworks. But people still, they go, hey, remember that day with the fire? Because it was, everyone thought it must just be my house, but then when you ran outside, it was everybody.
Yeah. And then you're like, hey, block party.
Right. Somebody, this is going to be great.
Get the baseball mitt. Let's have a party.
You still live southwest, or did you move out in the city?
No, I'm in the city now. So, but family's still on the south side.
Yeah.
I call it the south side. Can we call it that?
It technically is. And don't you find, with most of the people I grew up with, if you grew up in the southwest suburbs or the south suburbs, you stay there. If you grew up north, you kind of stay there. There's very little cross-pollination for
some
reason.
Somebody goes north, so a girlfriend of mine from high school moved up to Lake Forest. I said, Stacy, what are you doing up
here?
Yeah,
it's a shock.
You can't go up there.
Right.
Yeah, I think the same thing for me now. If I go north of North Avenue, I get a little dizzy.
That's the line of demarcation.
It is for
North Avenue is the cutoff.
Yeah, it's tough when I have to go up anywhere up there. I'm like, oh, no, if I'm on the cusp. I mean,
it's dangerous.
It's a really awkward place for me to be, unbalanced.
You have to have a passport on you at all times.
You do, to go on the north side. I'll tell you, the first time I ever went really like to the north suburbs, I went to Northbrook right out of college, and I was interviewing for a job, and I got up there, and I was like, hey, this is the north side. Looks just like the south side.
It's similar. Same weather.
I thought it was supposed to be like Shangri-La and like more beautiful flowers and just
There are some differences, not dramatic, but the attitude of people. And we talk about this all the time because, as you know, Cubs fans and White Sox fans aren't always cordial to each other.
Right.
But there's a weird friction between the people of the south side and the people of the north side. And sometimes they don't mix well. I don't understand why. It's the same city.
We just try to all get along. If you bring up the north side versus the south side, there's always a thing.
Oh, yeah.
There's always that thing.
Yeah.
And a thing is always going to be there. But I feel like we can just all get along and have this nice little happy medium.
Yes.
Except for when it comes to sports.
Right. That's the one time it doesn't work.
Yeah. Are you a Sox fan then?
I am a fan
of Chicago.
Of both teams.
Me too.
Are you also? Don't people go, well, that's impossible. You have to choose one or the other. It's Sophie's choice. Which one of your children do you like?
Absolutely. They said, pick a team. My best friend since I was 4, grew up on the South Side. She said, you got to pick a team. And I said, okay. She said, pick a team. I go, well, I pick the Cubs. And she said, no, you got to pick a team. I go, well, the White Sox aren't in the World Series, right. So I pick the Cubs.
Right. That's like, smart.
If it was the White Sox and the Cubs, I'd have to pick the Sox.
You double your chances of something good happening. Now, in our lifetimes, it's only happened twice for the right. White Sox a few years ago, for the Cubs this year. But why wouldn't you want either team to succeed?
And
it doesn't make sense.
How great is it for your city?
Yeah,
and that's
it is.
The part I love about it.
Yeah.
Just being a Chicago fan.
That's it.
I know a lot of the South Side is like, you can't say that. You can't.
You can.
But I am.
You can't.
Yes.
Good. All right. Jane Munzuris is here. She's filling in for Wendy. A scheduled day off for Wendy. She'll be back on Monday. We're going to take a quick break, and then we have a lot more show. If you want to jump in, you know how to do it. It's 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Jane on WGN. Steve, is everything okay at home?
As soon as I said it.
What happened?
I said the Bulls are hosting the Cleveland Indians.
And they can't, because no. You can't cross-pollinate sports.
No, actually they are giving tickets to the Cleveland Indians to bring them back to the Championship City. But as soon as I said it, and then traffic was on and it was gone. I had to wait
right.
and take my lumps.
No, that's all right. Do you know the big rumor about what's going to happen at the Bulls and Cleveland Cavaliers game? There's a big rumor. Do you know what it is?
Someone's going to steal second and we'll have free tacos?
No.
No?
Although, wouldn't that be nice? I love when that happens.
What is it?
By the way, hi, everybody. It's me, Bill, and Jane Menzures is filling in. Hi, Jane.
Yeah.
Nice to see you.
Big cloud of chalk and a smoke in the air?
No, but okay. that's an excellent mm-hmm. guess as well. There's a rumor that LeBron James made a bet with Dwayne Wade.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right? So the payoff on this bet was, quick spoiler alert, the Cubs won the World Series. They beat the Cleveland Indians in the World Series. So the payoff of the bet is supposed to be that LeBron James has to come into the United Center dressed as a Chicago Cub, wear a complete Chicago Cub uniform. And the rumor is that that's what's going to happen when Cleveland comes to town tonight.
That would be nice. Well, I saw
would that
a
be
picture.
Fun?
Was that a doctored picture of him?
Was there already a picture of him wearing a Cubs uniform?
I thought I saw one.
Oh,
but
I didn't
it
see
been,
that.
Might have been Photoshopped.
Maybe.
I hope that happens.
I would love to see that.
Great photographer.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Let's hope.
I think he'd do it. He has to.
He has to.
If it's a bet, you lose a bet. You
have
do
to
it.
Pay off.
Yeah.
That's a rule.
And that's his old buddy.
Yep. They were teammates. Jane Manzuris is here. She is filling in for Wendy, who will be back on Monday. People know you and love you, Jane, of course, from your work on Living Healthy Chicago, which can be seen on Channel 9 at what time?
Sunday mornings at 11:30. And then also we re-air on CLTV.
Mm-hmm.
So you just turn it on. You might find my face all the time.
I'm not taking a slam at CLTV, but they will run anything now.
Yes, true.
They will put anything on the air. except our show. They've got Steve Cochran on in the morning for an hour. They've got Ro on in the afternoon for
and
an hour.
Not Bill and Wendy.
Wendy and I offered
them
a huge sum of money.
Nothing.
We go here, and we just pushed money across the table, and they go, no.
Maybe if I say something to them.
Would you mention
I'll vouch for you.
We've worked together?
It'd be a nice show.
That would be so nice.
Yeah.
Are you up on internet slang?
So, like what the cool kids are saying?
Yeah, what the cool kids say.
Yeah, I think I'm a cool kid and that I do know and that I find myself not knowing and I think, what's going on? How come I don't know this?
That's right.
And then I look at my birth date and I go, oh, well, maybe that's why. Do you have some words for me?
I found this thing on Huffington Post which tells you, it says, now, I don't like the wording of this because this implies that we're old. All right?
Yeah.
Here's how they've worded this article. Internet slang words that every middle-aged person needs to know.
And we're not middle-aged.
No, far from it.
No, I get younger every year.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still in my
20s,
so I'll keep you guys leveled here. I'll correct you.
Would you help us, Kevin, with some of these?
Don't worry.
Is there some way? All right, so these are, evidently, this is what the, as you pointed out, the cool kids are saying these things,
mm-hmm.
and this will be helpful to much, much older people than us, the middle-agers.
We're helping you out.
Yeah, this is a public service. This will count as public service. All right, so if a kid, somebody like Kevin.
He's a kid.
All right. If you see somebody like Kevin and they use this phrase, if they say either lit or turnt, and that's spelled T-U-R-N-T, or turnt up.
That's an easy one.
They go, that guy over there, he's lit. He's turnt. He's turnt up. What do they mean by that, Jay?
He's drunk.
Is he drunk, Kevin? Is that one?
I think that can be like lit. Yeah, you're lit up. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's more so like it can be like if I'm going next level on something or if I'm going hard on something. I know. I feel like I'm already speaking in like euphemisms, but
yeah.
Yeah.
You
so
are.
You lost me. So
yeah,
you're
I don't know what
so you're overexcited. You're lit up.
Yeah.
Is that what it means?
Yeah. I think that's a good way
all
to
right,
put it.
All right. Huffington Post says it refers to getting stoned or drunk.
Oh. See?
And don't worry about the spelling of turnt because it should be turned, right?
Like you're turned over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
We think, but
it could also mean that something is popular. So you can moderate your concern when you hear something, if you hear that something is lit or turnt or turned up. For instance, lit has been around for a long time. It says the mutilated turnt, though, is relatively new. So it used to just be turned up, and now it's
and,
turned
and
up.
And see, I know lit because maybe 20 years ago, be like, that guy's totally lit. But turnt, I had never heard of. So I just went off the first word, which is why I said drunk.
And you can bring them all together and say, I'm going to turn up tonight and get lit.
Oh, you can say that all in one sentence?
I think so.
Kevin, sometimes one of my daughters will say, I'm going to a banger.
And okay.
Is that, do I want her to go to a, do, that means she's attending a banger?
It's a big rager, big party.
Huge party.
Yeah. It's a big party's a banger?
Yeah, but she's fine. Go to the banger.
Because I always say to her, sometimes one of them will say, hey, Dad, I'm heading out to a banger. And then I say, not knowing what it is, I am also going to a banger. We should drive together.
And then they say, yeah, drop me off at the corner.
Right.
Pick me up there later.
Right.
Funny thing, we're going to the same banger.
Yeah, let's go.
We have the same
we'll all drive together.
This will be great.
And I've written in temper paints on the back of my car, banger mobile, so that people know I'm headed toward a banger right
and
now.
And then you're super cool. You're the cool kid because you're in the banger mobile.
It's turnt, Bill. Mm-hmm. That is turnt.
Is it turnt? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the next level.
What does this mean? No, this one's bad. I think this, I'll say it anyway, but I don't like this one. If something, if somebody writes on the internet, because this is internet slang, KMS or KYS, do you know what those mean? KMS or KYS?
And I don't, keep, nope.
Keep what?
Keep you safe.
No.
Keep,
no, that would be a good thing.
If the internet thing, it's got to be the worst thing.
It is bad.
I don't know what it is.
KYS? It is bad.
KMS?
It refers to somebody, like somebody will say something they don't like, and then at the end of it, like they'll go, oh, the Bears lost again. KMS.
Oh. Kiss.
No.
Oh.
Wow.
Is it like...
No. Wow. Yours is worse, though. Kill myself.
Yeah.
No.
Or KYS. Like if somebody says, I just got the new Taylor Swift CD.
And then I would write back to you, KYS.
Kill yourself.
Kill yourself. That's terrible.
That's not good.
Just erase that from what you think you might want to use it
yes,
for.
Yes. That one's bad.
That should be, shouldn't even be printed.
Jane, what about this one?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody is dabbing, what are they doing?
Trying it out?
Are they trying something out by dabbing? Oh. I think that you mean dabbling.
I do mean dabbling.
Dabbling is similar.
Dabbing.
Let's say I said, you know,
I asked
Kevin to do something, but he's in the producer's room and he's dabbing. What would he be doing?
Working on something else. He's texting on his phone. I don't know. He's laughing at us is what he's doing.
That's not
he
it.
I think it's funny.
There's a couple uses, but I think lately it's
do
been
you know
popularized.
What it means?
Yeah, it's been popularized as like the dance move where they like kind of do that guy.
Oh, you
no.
Dab.
Oh, he just bumped his head. Kevin. Kevin's out cold.
Turned in here.
Oh, is that what happened?
He's too lit up.
Kevin, dancing is not listed among here. Wait, let me see if it is among one of the other. Nope, they don't
the
list
dab,
dancing at all.
The dab, is a dance.
Dabbing on him.
The dab is a dance?
Yeah, you just put your head inside the crook of your elbow, and that's the dab.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I didn't know how to name, but I've seen the dance.
Dabbing.
Like 12-year-old kids do it.
Is it's trying the marijuana.
Yeah. What?
Yep, that's what it says on here. If somebody on your internet is dabbing, you should turn them into the police because they are trying the marijuana.
So if your daughter says, hey, Dad, I'm going to go to a banger and get lit up and try and dab.
I would turn her into the local authorities.
Yeah, you would lock her in a room.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
She would be behind bars.
Yes.
I wouldn't allow that sort of behavior.
Wow.
Now this is interesting because these are not words so much as just emojis. You know, Jane, when we were kids,
mm-hmm.
a long, long time ago, if you wanted to convey a message to somebody, you had to use words. But now, words are old news. You just send
emoji
them a picture of somebody,
mm-hmm,
an emoji.
Yeah.
So if somebody sends you an emoji of their eggplant, like they say, Jane, I watch your show. I watch Living Healthy Chicago, and I like you, and I like what you do. And then they put a picture of an eggplant, an emoji of an eggplant.
Yeah.
What would that refer to?
An eggplant.
Yep.
I've seen that before, and it looks just like a big ball.
People have sent you this in the past, an eggplant?
Well, right. I think they were sending me a turkey. There's an emojicon that's a turkey. It just looks like a big black dot, and took me forever. I'm like, oh, it's a turkey. So if you send me the eggplant, I don't know. You're purple?
It is not that you're purple,
no. You should eat more eggplant. I like eggplant parmesan.
No.
I've got a great recipe for eggplant parm.
See, all those make sense.
Sure.
You would think that would be it. Kevin, do you know?
It's probably not appropriate, is it?
It's not.
Yeah, it's not a nice thing.
See, mm-hmm. And that's where my brain doesn't go, which is why I don't know these things.
If somebody...
Oh, no.
If somebody sends you that note, hey, Jane, I watch you in Living Healthy Chicago, love what you do, big time fan, and then they send you an eggplant... It is a picture of their reproductive organ.
Yeah, you don't want that.
You don't want that.
No. Why would you put that at the end of I love your, it doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
Do they need to go see the doctor?
Yes.
There's something else going on.
I'm having
we don't
a prostate exam on Wednesday, but before I go, I want you to know that I love what you do.
Picture of the eggplant.
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to an exam for eggplant.
For this. Yeah.
I love your
seeing an eggplant doctor on Wednesday. All right. We have more of these. If you're a teenager, if you're a kid, or you know somebody who is, and they're using these slang terms on the internet, some of them are good, or some of them are not. We'll explore more next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Jane in for Wendy on WGN. Thank you, voice of Steve Cochran. It's Bill F. I'm in for myself. Jane Manzuras is sitting in for Wendy Snyder. Wendy's taking the day off, court-appointed. She'll be back on Monday.
I hope she's shopping.
She is shopping.
Is she?
Sometimes she shops during the show.
I would,
I'll
too.
I'll look over and she'll be shopping.
A little internet shopping? Never heard anybody.
What's wrong with that?
Mm-hmm. I'm doing it right now.
Are you doing it as we speak? It turns out this internet thing is very popular now. A lot of people have the internet in their homes.
Yes.
It's become a very, very big phenomena. And there are all sorts of slang words that middle-aged people, according to Huffington Post, middle-aged people might not pick up on these words or phrases, but the kids, they know what they are, and as a public service, we're pointing out what they are. And you said you had at least
one.
Well,
it's not more of a saying than, I guess, a slang, but I was at a bachelorette party, and everyone was in their 20s, and this one kid kept saying, yes, like, yes.
But with
like
a bunch of A's in the middle?
Yes.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
Was he from Stockholm?
He's not from Stockholm. No? I said, what are you saying? It means like, hey, Bill, would you like to go golfing? And you're like, yes. Or I don't even say it the right way because it's not a yes. It's a yes. That's what all the cool kids are saying. You know what we're
That's
talking
true,
about, Kevin?
Kevin?
I think it's from, well, I know it from the TV show Broad City. They do that in there all the time. And it's like when you're really excited about something, you do what she did.
No, you let me hear you say it.
Yes.
That's it. And it's a big way to say yes.
Like, I'm not good at it.
Absolutely, 100%.
But with a Scandinavian almost accent.
I might not be doing it justice. Like,
sounded legit.
Yes. I don't know. But I can't master the yes. I think you have to ask a younger person to really get in there.
So, a lot of times it's followed by queen. Yas, queen.
Queen.
I don't know why.
Oh, see, this I don't know.
I think like Stephanie uses it, I'm pretty sure.
Stephanie, our assistant program director, uses it?
I think I've heard her.
Think I've heard her use it too.
Why the queen part?
That's a mystery to me. I don't
and
know.
And they mean royalty or Freddie Mercury's band? Which do they mean?
Probably Freddie Mercury's band.
Probably Freddie Mercury's
because
band.
Because they're young enough, they'd want to say,
All right, so now that we know that it's something that the cool kids say, would you ever even try, like, what would have to happen in the world for you to go, well, now I'm going to say that too, then? I'm not going to ever say it.
You're not, just try it. Just give it a little try.
Maybe at a banger. I might say it at a banger.
While you're lit up.
You know what, speaking of banger, my daughters have told me, like, I don't know if you know what this is, but every once in a while I'll hear them say, are you tweaking? And do you know what that means?
Dancing?
Nope. Twerking is dancing.
Twerking.
And you can't, I don't think in Illinois you can tweak and twerk at the same time. I think you have to choose one or the other.
Can you be lit up, tweak and twerk?
I would
like,
not.
Does she mean you're like panicking? You're kind of freaking out a little bit?
That's exactly like you're going crazy. If you're tweaking, if you say something to somebody who's under 23 or 24, they will question your sanity and they will ask if you're tweaking.
Like, do you remember raves, like back in the rave days?
Yep.
Kevin, do you remember raves at all?
I mean, I never went, but yeah.
Yeah, okay, so like when raves were cool, people would be tweaking, and I don't know that that was a good thing to be doing, you know?
But at a rave party, if people were tweaking, didn't it mean they were like having a seizure of some sort?
Right, because they were probably
using something
that made them tweak.
Yeah.
But if you're tweaking now, it means you're over-exaggerating about something.
Right.
I like it.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to point this out. I already told you, Jane, but I find this fascinating. On the text line, we asked a little while ago, if somebody sends you a note with an emoji of an eggplant, what could that possibly mean? And, you know, we're all very innocent people here on the show.
Yeah.
You are, I am. But all of the texters, every single texter, a texter without an exception, knew that it was the male reproductive organ. We're like 31 for 31.
And
I'm
my question
over.
To you is, how do they know it was
They're
the reproductive
plugged
organ?
Plugged in.
You know what? They probably did grab their phones and put the eggplant and they go, oh, I know what that is.
Right. That's it exactly. There was a time where I played, this is along the line with internet slang. I played a video game that was, it was a pool room. You could play pool against people from other countries. So what you would do is, or right here in America too, but you didn't know, like when you went on, you could play somebody anywhere in the world.
On the internet.
And you get a cartoon pool stick and you would have to aim the, just like pool.
Yeah, sure, fun game.
So they also, at the bottom of the screen, had a dialogue box. So you could talk to the people, you could, you know, you can mess with them while they were shooting. You'll never make this shot or whatever.
And you're never going to get, you don't know them.
Right.
So they can't, you know.
Completely anonymous.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
All right. For the first few months that I played this game for about a half a year. Mm-hmm. For the first few months that I would play, a lot of times people would start out a conversation with the letters ASL. And I thought that they were swearing at me. I thought that they were being mean to me because they would say, nice shot, ASL, like that. And I'm like, what's with it? Why are people so mean all the time? Do you know what that meant, ASL?
I don't know.
Age, sex, location. So it was their way of saying, how old are you? Are you a man or a woman? And where do you live?
They just want to know.
They're just curious who they're playing against. But I was assuming the worst.
Right.
I was assuming
they were calling you something.
You just got here and they're everyone's mean
but
to me.
But my question is, if you're playing against these people and they're like, hey, great shot, ASL.
Right.
Well, great shot, age, sex, language. How about ASL?
Right.
Question mark.
Wouldn't
shot.
That have been better?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been
Did
better?
Did you ever answer them?
Well, then I'm
lie.
Like, I'm going to swear back. I'm going to say mean things to them then.
You, KYS.
Right, right. I thought they were tweaking.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that meant, but I thought
they probably
were.
Probably had a banger.
What about this? If somebody sends you an emoji of a peach, what does that mean?
Happy days.
No. But I like, you were so positive in the way you delivered that.
Well,
that
peaches, was... it reminds me of Georgia. Maybe it's like your Bishy Newly or something.
No, it's none of that. Much like the eggplant, the peach represents a body part. In this particular instance, the peach would be your rear end.
Your derriere.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm Greek, by the way, and I said Bishy Newly, which is...
I know what that meant.
Okay, that means that, but for a little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, Bissy Newley, I believe, is the sister of Anthony Newley, who was so good in Oliver.
I love Bissy. What a great guy.
Fantastic. If somebody puts this down, they're sending you a note. You're online and you're talking to this person, and they send you a note, and it ends with the letters CD9. What does that mean? CD9. They're back and forth, and then quickly, CD9. What does that mean?
So is that like 10-4 I'm out?
Kind of. You're very close, but it's a little more immediate. It's more of a warning.
Catch you later.
No.
Catch my draft 9.
I don't know.
You know what's funny? I don't know these acronyms or the letters. I just don't know.
No one's ever sent you that in a note.
No.
I don't know why they would.
I think people know that I don't know.
Here's what CD9 means. It means code 9, which is a polite way of saying, my parents are nearby. Be careful what you say.
Have you seen that on your daughter's text messages?
I never have.
Code 9. Wow.
That means parents are in the vicinity.
Yeah.
Be very careful. Now, if they write the letters, the number 99, that means either the parents are gone or Barbara Feldon is at your house from Get Smart.
And we can go back to talking the way we were, my friends.
Right, right.
Wow.
All right.
CD9 is good to know, like, if anyone, like, maybe your wife or your boyfriend's around, and I'm, like, trying to buy a gift.
Code 9.
CD9, stop talking.
Keep it clean.
Or, like, your boss. Maybe you're like, wow, that was such a drag today. Everything was great. You know, you just add the CD9 in there.
Right.
I worry sometimes people are reading my text messages on the bus.
On the bus?
Shoulder.
Yeah, I guess it would be easy. You're easy access on the bus.
Yeah, I take the bus right here in front of the tower and just walk right in. But it's perfect. But I'm like, are these people seeing what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Be careful.
CD9.
CD9 from here on in. Mm-hmm. All right, more tweaking ahead. We've got the news. Steve's got the news and then more show. It's Bill and Jane in for Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff, and it's Jane Manzouris. She is sitting in for Wendy Snyder, who will be back on Monday. And one of our favorite guests has joined us in studio, Lucianne Walkowitz, astrophysicist at the Adler Planetarium, TED speaker, artist, guitarist for Ditch Club, and even though you're tired of it, I will never be tired of it, 13th sexiest scientist in the world or in the United States?
In Business Insider magazine, your go-to source for...
for all things sexy and science.
For superficial qualities of scientists.
My Christmas dream, Lucianne, is that this year they reevaluate that list and that you crack the top 10. That is my Christmas dream.
That is a fine dream for you to have.
Thank you.
That's a great accomplishment.
Yep. Yeah.
Did you get your picture in there and everything?
Yep.
Yep.
Did you have to dress sexy or just your... You know, just because it is the most sexiest...
No, yes. They just asked me for a picture, and I was like, here, this is not terrible.
Did any like scientist turn that? Did any scientist said, hey, I'm in this because I love science. Yeah. I won't play that game. Did any of them do that, or were any of them like, wow, I made the top 100, and this is great?
Actually, I think a lot of people were not pleased with that article. Really? Because it is superficial, and mm-hmm. it's lauding scientists for something that has like nothing to do with right. their science. Babak Ferdowsi, who's the better known as NASA Mohawk guy, who was the guy on the Curiosity rover.
Oh,
team.
Yeah. I know who that is. Yeah.
So he's a friend of mine. He's number one. And oh. I texted him and I was like, what's up, number one? And he was like, I'm not a scientist. I'm an engineer.
Oh.
So
take me off the list. Yeah.
Where was Bill Nye on the list? Did Bill Nye make the top 100?
I don't know.
No.
Yeah.
I find him very sexy.
Does it come out every year? This is great. I never knew that there was a top 100
sexiest scientist.
I don't
know that
scientist.
It does. Does it?
I think they were just maybe scrambling. Slow news day, I guess.
Oh, maybe. It's still an honor.
Did you get mad at the person that nominated you? You're like, what are you doing?
You can't get mad. It's a high honor. Is Buzz Aldrin okay?
Yep, Buzz is doing a lot better, as some of your listeners maybe heard, and I know you both heard this. Buzz was down at the South Pole,
mm-hmm.
Which is like, I guess, the second coolest place you can go after mm-hmm. you've been to the moon.
Yeah.
You know, maybe. Probably the second most remote place you could go.
Probably.
So he was down there touring and was feeling not really good. You know, as we were talking about, you're allowed to have a couple bad days when you're 86 and you've been to space. So he's back in New Zealand, actually, doing his recovery. And he posted some pictures of himself giving the thumbs up. And he looks like he's
good.
Back hale and hearty.
That's good.
But, yeah, he had to leave. You know, Antarctica is not the greatest place to get sick.
Probably not.
Yeah. You don't know what the hospital is going to be like. Mm-mm. Probably being home is better.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Have you ever talked to him, Lucianne?
Buzz
Aldrin?
I never have, no.
We've had him on the show a couple times. And the first time we had him on, he seemed to have a great sense of humor about everything. You know, we talked to him about being on The Simpsons and a couple of other things. He had a great sense of humor. The second time, not quite as much.
How many of your jokes did you tell him?
Probably about several more than I should have, probably. Do you think that might have added to his disposition, do you think, maybe? Just a little bit. But he is, like, when you think about the early days, those early Apollo astronauts, is he the last survivor, or are there a couple more? I'm trying to think. Thomas Collins is still around, isn't he?
Yeah, Mike Collins.
Mike Collins, I'm sorry.
Still
Tom Collins is a drink,
in,
isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, Tom yeah. Collins is a drink. Mike sorry. Collins.
It's Friday, you're fine.
Right.
Lives in Italy, where he perhaps has a Tom Collins from time to time.
Right.
But yeah, I believe he's still alive, and explaining in Italian that he did not actually leave the spacecraft.
Right, he stayed inside.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's got to do it.
And Mike
right?
Collins was the guy.
But don't you think once you're already up there, you want to get out?
I mean, yes.
You take
the
trip.
You're all the way there. You don't just stay on the boat or stay on the plane.
Well, but somebody has to. Like, you can't just...
Right.
Can you trade spots? Like, let me go first, and then we'll switch, and then I can get out there.
I think if our landing technologies at that point were a little better, and, mm-hmm. You could take more of a taxi back and forth to the moon, that would have been one thing. But, remember this was the first time it ever happened. And so even getting back to the orbiter was like not a necessarily.
It's a huge thing, right?
So
do you know who his daughter? Now, in that first moon landing, you had the big three. You had Buzz Aldrin, you had Armstrong, and then you had Collins. Do you know who his daughter is?
No, actually.
His daughter, Kate Collins, played Natalie on All My Children for, I think, 9 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Isn't that cool?
Wow. Fancy family best, right
isn't
there.
Isn't that? Yeah.
Yeah. A bunch of underachievers.
Can I ask a question? I just heard this yesterday, and this may or may not be true, but I've heard that medical scientists have now found out that when the astronauts go on the moon, when they go that far out of, into outer space, their eye sockets and their eyeballs swell. And they just found this out, and they said, we figured out why. It's because the spinal fluid is not able to move freely because of gravity.
Yeah, so it's actually not with going to the moon. It's the astronauts that go and live up on the International Space Station. Mm-hmm. So, here on Earth, we evolved as creatures to have all these signals about, like, posture changes.
Sure.
The effect of gravity here on Earth has caused us to work in a particular way. And so, when you sit up or lie down or, tilt to the side, your body kind of knows how you're pointed and yeah. gravity yeah. is acting on those fluids in your body differently. So one of the things that has been noticed over the past several years by actually a physician who was an astronaut as well, who was up in the International Space Station, started to notice that he couldn't read listings, like the chore list, I think it was, because mm-hmm. it's in like 8-point font, which I frankly have trouble reading here in Earth's gravity. So the International Space Station is orbiting, which means it's in free fall. So they're in what we call a microgravity environment. So there's gravity, but they're not experiencing the same kind of that we have here.
Yeah.
They've now done a bunch of follow-up studies because what they find is that there is this buildup of fluid, and they're not really sure why. But there's this buildup of fluid that affects like the optic nerve and causes some distortions, basically astigmatism in mm-hmm. the shape of your eyeball. And there are a number of different physiological changes that happen to astronauts when they go to space. Like one of the big ones that's been known for a long time is that most astronauts come back with mild osteoporosis.
They do.
Because you're, again, used to, the impacts of gravity, and so you lose bone density. And so you can have very young, hale and hearty people breaking a hip when they get back if they're not careful. And that actually can be turned around and remediated by taking, like, calcium supplements and stuff like that. And once you're back in Earth's gravity for a while, that goes away, but the eyesight changes don't. And so they're very concerned about this because that's, a couple months to a year of living on the International Space Station. If you mm-hmm. want to send people further into space to Mars or whatever, you're going to have to understand how you can work against that because you don't want people to go severely blind while they're there.
Because we don't have anything that's pumping the spinal cord fluid, just but our movements do it, whereas our blood is being pumped by our heart.
Yeah.
So that's, that actually works because we're getting it pumped. But the spinal cord fluid, that's an interesting thing. I just heard it.
Yeah. But doesn't this play into the study that they did with the twins where they sent one twin into space? This just mm-hmm. happened a year or so ago. One twin is up in space and they keep one on Earth and they just wanted to see how the bodies were different with those circumstances, huh?
Yeah. Speaking of underachieving families, the two twins that are in the astronaut program.
Yeah. Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Right, exactly. One of them indeed stayed on Earth and one lived up for a year on the International Space Station. They wanted to compare the two of them. The hard thing is that it's really it's hard to study some of these effects because you have very small numbers. So you have a problem which we call small number statistics.
Yeah, right.
Where you sometimes don't know, if you only have like a handful of people, you don't know whether there's differences between those people that cause them to be affected in a particular way.
Sure.
Or whether that's just something that happens to everybody. And that makes it difficult to understand how to work against it, how to like make it better for those astronauts.
So the easy answer is we need a lot more twins entering into the space program.
Yes.
Yeah. Please, twins, listening.
The doublemint twin auditions. We'll take the girls that don't get picked and the guys. We'll take the twins that aren't in
the
commercial.
We want all of them.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a quick break and then more of this sort of behavior. We're at 312-981-7200. Call us or text us back after this. It's Bill and Jane in for Wendy on WGN. Bill Left, Jane Manzouris filling in for Wendy Snyder. She'll be back on Monday, a scheduled day off. Lucianne Walkowitz is in studio with us, astrophysicist over at the Adler Planetarium, TED speaker, artist, guitarist for Ditch Club. Is Ditch Club playing anytime soon, Lucianne? Can people see them over the holidays?
Not over the holidays. We're taking a little bit of time off to record. So
are you?
Stay tuned. Cool. We'll have
Excellent.
Another EP out.
Sometime. Congratulations. Thank Congratulations. You. Here's a big story from science that was in the news, from astronomy. They have found a large ice sheet on Mars. What exactly does this mean? This is good news, right? This means a possible step toward life on Mars, right?
Well, possibly. So, certainly we know that Mars was probably a warmer, friendlier, cuddlier planet in the past. We think that it had global oceans at one point, and nowadays it's pretty barren and pretty dry overall. Mm-hmm. So, in the search for life in the universe, we're always looking for water as a place that, we find life thriving here on Earth. Mm-hmm. And even though, what we're usually looking for is liquid water, it is true that we have people that study potential life in ice. So the way that this ice sheet was found was with the MRO, which stands for the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. It goes around the planet and it uses essentially ice penetrating radar, which is the same way that we study ice here on our own planet. So just a couple months ago, we had a scientist called Brittany Schmidt who works on potential life on Europa, which is a moon of Jupiter. And she does this by flying a World War II era plane with ice penetrating radar over Antarctica and uses that to probe like where there might be, you know, melty water within the ice sheet, and then, you know, like drops, like basically goes ice fishing with very fancy science robots that study like life below and within the ice. And so in the case of this ice sheet that's on Mars, they used a very similar method to probe this one area of Mars that had this sort of like scalloped appearance. So it all, you know, much like, you know, like snert, like the dirty snow that happens here late in the season in Chicago.
I've never heard that.
Well, it just sort of looks like dirt, right? Yeah, it's snow. Yeah. So when you look at Mars, it doesn't look like a big, like nice white ice sheet because a lot of Mars has this red dust. So they looked for this scalloped area on the surface that is typical of places where there's underground ice here on the Earth. So again, we used the Earth as a way of figuring out where to look on Mars. And then discovered that there's, in fact, this sheet of ice underneath. So now that doesn't mean that there's still existing life there, but it is possible. You know, we don't find, like, you know, I don't know, ice crabs or anything like that.
Right.
But there's, like, algae and stuff that lives on ice here on the Earth. So maybe that's another habitat that we could look at.
Is Mars the most likely other planet to have life, or is there another planet that you think, that's a little bit more close to having life?
Well, Mars kind of has an advantage in that it's one of the easier places for us to study. So, you know, Mars and Venus are our two nearest neighbors. Mars is a little smaller than the Earth, and Venus is about the same size. The reason that you don't hear about Venus rovers is that Venus has this very thick atmosphere that makes it very hot on its surface. So when we've sent spacecraft to Venus, you know, it's more or less like taking your iPhone and putting it in a broiler. Like, it doesn't last very long, right? So we have some studies of Venus, but not a whole lot of, like, on-the-ground information. Now, Mars, on the other hand, is also close by to us, relatively speaking, and is a lot milder of an environment. So we could do things like send rovers to the surface. Some of the other places that we might look, like, that's kind of it for, like, the terrestrial planets, the small rocky planets in our solar system that might host life. But the larger, the, like, gas and ice giant planets like Jupiter and Saturn, their moons might potentially be a place to look for life. So a lot of people are really interested in studying life on Europa, which is this icy moon of Jupiter that has, we think, an under ice ocean. So it doesn't have an atmosphere, but it has this, like, ice cap that shows cracks in it and occasionally, like, geysers and stuff. So there might be ice life under there, or, like, aquatic life of some sort. Titan, which is a moon of Saturn, has always been a place that people have looked to as a potential place that might host life, too.
But that's the day that everyone in your business, let's say everyone on Earth, is really looking forward to, when we have proof positive that there's life on another planet. That's going to be the biggest day, right?
Yeah, I think that'll be really huge. You know, and I think that's not just like a scientific thing, because, you know, if you think about the context of our life here on Earth in the greater universe, that's a very, like, human question.
Of course.
Yeah. And if we have an example of life that we can study that evolved on a different world, then that could maybe help us understand, like, how life arises.
Without question.
But if you think practicality, it's time, it's money. You send all your experiments up there and astronauts just in search of life or in search of the new expeditions. And we've been waiting for so long. It's just, you know, you think about the opportunity. It takes a lot of time and effort and money.
In our brains,
we're like, yes, tomorrow, let's do it.
We want it.
Yeah.
There's a great question on the line for you. Nancy's been holding on for a bit. Nancy, go ahead. I love this question.
Hi. You know, I was wondering what you thought of Stephen Hawking's proposal that for humanity to survive, we need to find another planet.
Stephen Hawking just said that sustainable life on this planet is going to come to an end a lot sooner than any of us were hoping to hear Stephen Hawking say. So that means we have to look out into the stars and find another place where humans could move to. What are your thoughts on that?
Right.
Well, first of all, you know, I think it's a good goal for us to try and live in other environments, other planets within the solar system. Going outside of our solar system is kind of prohibitively distant at this point with our current propulsion technologies, you know, we're not looking at human beings going and living on planets around another star anytime soon. And in order to do that with the technologies we have, you'd have to like live on what you would call a generation ship, like kind of like in WALL-E, where people just sort of live on this massive cruise ship that's in space, and you spend many generations traveling to another world. So certainly that's one possibility. But here in our own solar system, kind of the only environment that would be potentially amenable to us going and living there is someplace like Mars. You know, I take a little bit of issue with this, like, the idea that we need to like back up humanity, kind of like we're a hard drive or something on another world, just because, you know, if you think about what makes it possible for human beings or anybody really to think about going to another world, it's kind of the thing you do as a civilization after all of your creature comforts are met.
Yeah.
You have shelter, you have food, you have water, et cetera. And that means that the resources that we have here on this planet are very important to us, just in terms of our ability to have those creature comforts met and to have the resources to be able to go to other worlds.
Right.
So, you know, even if one day human beings live on Mars, Mars is never going to be as hospitable an environment as the Earth is.
Right.
And that's why it's important to preserve the Earth. You know, I'm all for us going and trying and living on other worlds, but we really have quite a gem here in our planet.
Right.
It's, you know, a place that we have a lot of resources for our survival, and that frees up our ability to do things that are really ambitious and that are not directly about survival like space.
No question. Nancy, great question. Thanks so much for participating. Have a good weekend. Sadly, we're out of time, but thank you it's always a pleasure to have you on. We really appreciate that. Lucianne Walkowitz is an astrophysicist, like we said, at the Adler Planetarium. Adler's always doing great things. Do they have I know in the past they've done some special Christmas shows there. Is that the case this year as well? Do you know?
I'm not sure if we have any holiday shows on. We do still have our wonderful Planet Nine show that premiered this year. And we do have coming up also Illinois resident discount days. So there's quite a few of those happening in the near future. So I advise you to go to the website, adlerplanetarium.org, and look up Illinois resident discount days and free days. And those will take you through the holiday season.
It's just good to get to Adler Planetarium.
Yeah,
it always
fascinating.
Is.
Fascinating. Come visit.
Absolutely. Great.
Thanks, Lucianne. Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break, then more show. It's Bill and Jane in for Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff, and Jane Manzouris is filling in for Wendy Snyder with a scheduled day off. She'll be back on Monday. All kinds of fireworks last night at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. We will explain why in just a little bit, but first, Andy Field joins us. He is a correspondent for ABC News. Andy, I watched the video. I heard the audio. They've been doing this thing over at the Harvard University School of Government, I want to say since the 70s. I've never seen it erupt like it did last night. Take us through what we saw and heard last night at that Harvard University School meeting.
Yeah, Bill, they've been doing it for years. They've never used knives and guns and mace and a bunch of other things. These are two teams that really despise each other. And it's really a mirror of what happened in the election here. The Clinton campaign basically, in fact, one of the most telling things here was that Palmieri, the campaign...
Jennifer Palmieri?
Yeah, Jennifer Palmieri, one of the spokespersons, said that the Trump folks provided a platform for white supremacists, and I would have rather have lost than win the way you guys did.
Yeah.
And of course, Kellyanne Conway came back and said, no, it was about Hillary Clinton. She didn't connect with people. She didn't get it. She didn't go out there and meet people. Trump ran a better campaign. He was a better candidate, and get over it, we won.
All right. In the past when they've done this, the purpose is to just kind of show America what we didn't get to see behind the scenes, correct? That's the original intent of this sit-down, huh?
It's supposed to be. It's supposed to be kind of a post-mortem autopsy of how do the campaigns work, what worked, what didn't work, and we didn't get much of that at all. We just got a lot of very angry back and forth.
So it should have been like the reality show after the winner comes out, then everyone sits at, you know, like, why you didn't get the rose type
right,
of thing.
Right, with Andy Cohen, usually.
Yes, and in this case, the emotions are still so raw, they just still want to rip each other's throats out.
That, too. And then, of course, there were other things. I mean, the Clinton folks wanted to pin this on everything but Hillary Clinton and any shortcomings she may have had. They talked about James Comey and the FBI letters that came out about the emails at the last minute saying that cost them the election. They talked about the fact that Donald Trump brought out some of the worst in the nation in terms of white supremacists, in terms of racism. And the fact is, the Trump people do have a number of points in that Donald Trump really was on the road 24/7. Hillary Clinton wasn't. There was at one point, she was in California raising money, a state there was absolutely no chance she was going to lose, when he was in states like Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania securing the win.
Now, who was the moderator? Were they able to keep it under control? It doesn't sound like so.
Not fully, no. Yeah. Who was the moderator, Andy?
I think the whole thing is going to air on CNN. I think there was a CNN anchor who was moderating this. But you can find most of this online right now.
At some point, Kellyanne Conway, as they were debating why Donald Trump won and why Hillary Clinton didn't win, she said it's because their side paid very close attention to the electoral map. And I have to say, you get a point for mentioning that, because they kind of did a lot better than Clinton's people, didn't they?
They did in the Electoral College. I mean, it was an overwhelming win in the Electoral College, but the way the Electoral College wins is it's skewed to bigger population states. We talk about those, the states that make or break a campaign every year. It's always Ohio or Florida or Pennsylvania, Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan. And those states mattered. But in many cases, no one thought that Hillary Clinton was going to lose those states. That was the big blue wall that the Democrats had never had let a Republican crack. And this time, Donald Trump managed to crack it.
Are you okay on time? I want to play a little bit of the audio, Andy, for people who didn't get a chance to hear this or see this. All right, so here's just a little bit of what went on last night in Harvard at the Harvard University Kennedy School of Government as the two campaigns got together for a sit-down to discuss the election. Listen to what went on.
He gets held to a standard that none of these other folks are.
Well, if providing a platform for white supremacists makes me a brilliant tactician, I am glad to have lost. Give me a minute, David. When I am more proud of Hillary Clinton's all right speech than any other moment on the campaign, because she had the courage to stand up. I would rather lose than win the way you guys did.
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. That's very clear today. No, you wouldn't, respectfully.
No.
How exactly did we win? Now go for it, Jen. How exactly did we win? I'd like to know, because I've sacrificed the last 4 months of my life to do it. Excuse me. And we did it. And we did it by looking at the schedule and looking at, yes, the electoral map of 270, because that's how you win the presidency.
One of my proudest moments of her is her standing up and saying with courage and clarity, in Steve Bannon's own words and Donald Trump's own words, the platform that they gave to white supremacists, white nationalists, and it is a very... very important moment in our history as our country. And I think as, you know, his presidency goes forward, I'm going to be very glad to have been part of the campaign that tried
to... Hey, Jen, do you think I ran a campaign?
All right, so that's last night.
Wow.
And that went on for quite a while.
A lot of emotions happening there.
All right, be honest with me, Andy. As soon as you pull out white supremacist, is that too low of a blow, or is that something that was legal under the constraints of what went on last night?
Well, they're analyzing why they won and why they didn't, and I think the Clinton folks genuinely believe that that is a factor in why Donald Trump appealed to a certain group of people. I'm not certain that there are enough white supremacists in this country to have him win the Electoral College vote. And in fact, some of the exit polling showed that the bigger issue here was there was a vast swath of middle America, especially people who were older in their 50s and plus, who thought Washington had abandoned them. They weren't doing as well as they had been doing 8 or even 15 years ago. And despite the fact that Barack Obama brought the economy back, they didn't feel it. And they wanted change, and they didn't think Hillary Clinton was going to provide it, so they said, let's go with Donald Trump.
I want to go back to something you said at the very beginning. In previous elections, in a case like this, and not just last night, not just what went on last night at Harvard University, but in general, you were able to get some sort of accord between the two sides. This time around, anytime there's something close to an accord, you think, this is fake. These guys do not like each other. You just heard a bunch of examples of that. What's different this time around? Why is this one so much more pointed than in the past?
I think it is just. I think the nation's more polarized, and they represent two sides of that polarity here. The folks who tend to be more liberal and supporting Hillary Clinton were just appalled at some of the things that Donald Trump said. They could not believe that people would vote for someone who was caught on tape talking about sexual assault, talking about having an affair with a married woman, talking about Mexicans, disparaging a Mexican judge, saying he could not possibly do a good job because of his Mexican heritage. Things like that. Also mentioning things like a Muslim ban on people coming into the country. I mean, these are things that are not constitutional. And the people who tend to be liberal look at those things and say, there's no way you can vote for someone no matter how much you like their policies. On the other hand, you had the Republicans and the folks who were conservatives who were saying, that didn't matter to us as much as you getting us jobs and improving our lives economically.
But as American citizens, like the choice has been made. It is what it is. We see these fights. We're watching this. We're hearing this. At some point, we all have to accept. We all have to bond together if we can and heal and move forward. But if we continue to have the fighting, how do we remedy that among the two parties and actually come to a compromise? So like, okay, let's all live together.
Excellent question, and the people who supported Barack Obama asked that for 8 years as Republicans blocked him at every step of the way. You had Donald Trump as the leader of the person who said he was an illegitimate president for most of his presidency with the whole birther movement. So, unfortunately, this argument goes both ways, and the folks on the liberal side are saying, you did this to our president for 8 years. Why do you suddenly expect us to just kind of say, everything's fine, let's have a kumbaya moment?
Andy, in the future, what could it possibly take to discredit somebody who's running for the office of presidency? You just read a laundry list of things that happened during Donald Trump's campaign, each of which in the past would have probably ruined him, not this time around. Can you think of anything, any scandal that somebody could have endured that would make people in America go, okay, he did that, I'm not voting for that guy?
You know, it's really hard to tell after this election here because there were things that every time they came up, you said, okay, this is a game.
Yeah.
And on both sides, with Hillary Clinton, with the emails, there were people that were outraged about this, saying, how can someone who literally ignored the rules, the rule of law, that had people destroy emails even after they were subpoenaed by Congress, how does that person run for office? So you have this on both sides of the issue, and yet millions of people voted for each of these candidates.
Right, right.
We had no other choice. You had to pick one or the other.
That's it. Andy, we appreciate it. Thanks so much for filing the report. Have a great weekend.
All right, take care.
Absolutely. That's Andy Field, correspondent for ABC News, taking us through what happened at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government just last night. You'll see it online. It's everywhere online, and you'll be able to hear all of it later. So stick around. It's Bill and Jane in for Wendy on WGN. Jane, you have brought all this angry politics upon the listener.
I didn't
want people to be subjected to that, but Jane Manzouris is here. She had a mandate. I want to bring angry politics to the show, and
yes,
she did. I hope you're happy.
I feel good.
Wendy will be back, by the way, on Monday, also bringing angry politics, a whole different kind of angry politics. Did you hear about this? We only have a couple minutes, but this is a story that we found yesterday and didn't get a chance to mention, but I think it needs to be mentioned. This is such a strange thing. Listen to this. An Oregon woman called the cops after a man allegedly. Now, this is a good. Everybody has a good reason for calling police. I've never heard a reason this good. This is the best reason of all time to call the police. She called the cops after a man refused to stop whistling the song Closing Time by Supersonic.
Was this her neighbor? Or?
Yeah, just a guy who loved the song Supersonic. For people who don't know the song, can we do just a little bit of it, Kevin? Just a little Supersonic Closing Time? Semisonic. He was just whistling this. He didn't have...
This is what I hear at the bar when the lights go on.
That's the last song that they play at most bars.
Yeah.
I've heard.
She must have had a bad experience.
Authorities in Forest Grove said that the woman allegedly told the man to shut up. That's not nice.
You don't say that.
You don't tell a good person
to
shut up.
You say KYS.
Yes, KYS. When he insisted on whistling the timeless classic Closing Time by Semisonic, or supersonic, as some people call it, but they're wrong. This happened near her driveway on Saturday.
Oh.
The song includes the lyric, "I hope you have found a friend," and yet it seems that this was not true in this case, according to Captain Mark Erb of the Forest Grove Police Department. It's not clear if the caller would have been more or less upset if a different genre had been performed, apparently. Now, if you've made it this far through the story, the song is undoubtedly stuck in your head. It,
it
is one of those songs.
I'm going to be whistling it the rest of the day.
Don't, because this woman will find you and call the police.
Or somebody else who has likes her idea. Here's the thing. Was it maybe just her little annoying neighbor that's like, no, now I'm really going to bother you? And how do you whistle closing time?
Well,
humming is a little bit easier with this song.
That's a song that does lead itself more to a hum than a whistle.
I would think.
But this guy, just hell-bent on insanity, just said, I'm going to ruin this woman's life and whistle this to my heart's content. But don't you operate, I think most of us operate under the belief that if I'm doing something big or small that's irritating somebody to that extent, I should probably stop. There has to be some prior history.
No, you keep needling it. Needle, get in there. But then when the cops are called, maybe you back off. Or you whistle it to the cops.
Right. Ask them to join you.
Really,
I have a song that's a very lovable, catchable song. Say, whistle along with me, police officers of Oregon, please. All right, we'll do this. We'll take a quick break. In a little while, Ro and Anna will be in. And you're friends with them, right? You know these guys.
I love Ro and Anna. Yeah,
the
I'm
best.
Happy
right.
to see them.
They'll be by in just a little bit. They'll explain what's coming up on their show. It's Bill and Jane in for Wendy on WGN.